Good morning and welcome to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. Bob is back from vacation. A pleasure to see him back. And boy, it's really hard to believe where we are at this point in time. We're in the middle of August, and in my eyes, we're just not too far. Bob, good morning, by the way.
Good morning. It's good to be back.
Knocking on fall's door.
You know what they say about fall? Fall is for planting.
And
we are going to talk about a lot of different stuff coming up over the next, 4 to 6 weeks about trees and planting, especially right after Labor Day. We are going to hammer those
trees.
There's
a lot of stuff to talk about. That's for sure.
We're excited about it.
Yeah. So how was your vacation?
Oh,
it's been a while, right? Has it been a while that you've taken some
time off? I took a staycation earlier, but that's not quite the same. But, being on the beach, falling asleep on the beach. Life was rough.
Did you win any medals in the competition?
No,
there
I did
in
not.
Venice?
Apparently, I got a few phone calls when I got back. They're like, "Hey, are you in Venice Beach?" And I'm like, "No, I wasn't." So it was. By the way, we need to post that picture of you that you put my face on this guy who's ripped body.
Well, I was going to post it last week, but. Good old Alex over there thought, I don't know, Tony. It looks pretty veiny.
Yeah, I didn't. I don't know.
Well, it's not me. It's all a joke, and I think it was hilarious for people to call me and say, yeah, hey, I heard you're at a competition. I'm like, no, I'm at a competition of falling asleep on the beach.
Because I know you like the workout, you like the lift, and, do those kind of things. And you do it on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And I always jokingly say that, you're drinking the protein powders and all that good stuff. Trying to build up, your shoulders have gotten a lot larger. Your neck's real big. Only guy I know has a 19-inch neck and a 30-inch arm length. I'm just kidding.
alligator arms. But every time we go to dinner, yeah. I got alligator arms. I can't reach my wallet, so I make you pay.
Got it. But I almost posted. You remember Joe Weider?
Yes.
He had like the protein cans. You'd mix that up with milk or whatever, make a shake out of it. But Alex did not think if I were to post that on Facebook that you would appreciate it.
See, Alex is getting to know me a lot more through the show, you and I have been friends a lot longer.
Yeah.
So, I would have, I still think we ought to post it because I think it's hilarious.
Perhaps we will.
I
like that kind of cut up stuff. If you can't cut up with your buddies, then who can you cut up with?
Exactly. And, every guy's ego and, I look like that. I don't even come close to looking. And who did that swabbing where they put my head on his body?
Jennifer Petunis.
Oh, thank you, Jennifer. I thought it was funny. She did a great job.
She does. She's a great person.
Right, and we'll get that up because we got to post it. That's hilarious.
Well, she thought it was funny. In the original photo that I had sent her to see if she could put your face onto that photograph, she texted or emailed me back, and she said, "Tony, the chin's too big." She goes, "I found this instead. Will this work?" And I responded, "Oh, definitely, it was great." I was in tears, but Alex took the wind out of my sails.
Oh,
I thought he might be right.
No.
Hey, don't get
Tony. That picture is so. There's a lot of veins.
That's what he said. That's a little veiny.
A little veiny.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely don't look like that.
It looked like a roadmap on this dude. He had these big arms.
I sent it to Alex. So, Alex, you have my permission to post it so our listeners can laugh and get a chuckle.
Feel very uncomfortable.
So
anyway, I wanted to tell you this before we went into the show. I know this isn't plant related, but yesterday I golfed with some friends, and we were over at AJ Jolly, and I found this to be so funny. One of the guys, he's got this big beer belly, and he's pointing at it, and he's telling me, he said, "Tony," he said, "you see this belly right here?" He said, "I had to quit drinking Budweiser for like 2 months because I had to have a surgery." He said, and when that occurred, he said, "when I was off drinking Budweiser for 2 months, I had to lay off 2 Clydesdales.
That's funny.
I thought that was good. I was like, "Jay Burke, can I borrow that?"
Heck yeah.
It'll lay off 2 Clydesdales.
Oh, but no, so, I mean, everybody needs a trip if you're able to, and sometimes you just can't, and I didn't get to go anywhere really last year. We had some other things we had to do, and, it's just nice to get away. I hated leaving. Wow, I tell you what, I came back, and you talk about coming back to a lawn full of weeds. I sent you the picture of that quack grass.
Well, we'll post that because obviously you don't listen to those two guys on Saturday mornings on B105.
You know, people have said that to me, but you know, I'm like the gardener whose yard's a mess, and I'm it's like the janitor whose house is a mess, the construction guy or
Painter whose house needs to be painted.
Yeah.
That's usually the one that I'll use. But
you know what? I was gone 1 week.
Yeah.
1 week. And I did finally, we got some sedge hammer in. Not much. Man, you talk about scarce teeth.
Did you get some for me?
I do. I have a box for you, too. So
thank you.
Sedge hammer, I got to use it. That stuff went crazy spreading, I guess, with the rhizomes underneath the ground.
I'm in check right now.
I'm not in check, but I'm in check.
I wasn't when I came back from Atlanta not long ago, but I'm in check right now.
Well, mine is bad. I won't spray tomorrow because I think it's supposed to be a high of 92, and I'm not going to. I might get it done this evening. We'll see, but it's going to be awfully hot the next 4 or 5 days.
Well, you know it is. I mean, we're looking today. I don't think today is going to be as bad as what they thought it was going to be, but still mid-80s, somewhat maybe partly sunny, partly cloudy. But tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, you know, those 3 days were above 90 easy, maybe mid-90s, and don't spray.
Well, it's too hot.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, you were just talking, but my forecast that I'm looking at, the one that I follow, the app I follow, shows 90 today, 96 tomorrow, 95 Monday, 93 Tuesday.
Wow, I didn't get that one for 90 today. I understood it was going to be 90, but I didn't see it on my...
But it's changed.
It wasn't on my radar. How's that?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, even when you watch local forecast, if you watch 5, 9, and 12.
No, I do see it. It changed since last night when
it changed since 4 o'clock this morning.
Hmm.
You know, but that's the thing. You just don't know.
But
the humidity is going to be pretty high today. Like the humidity right now, I believe, is in the upper 80s.
Crazy.
You know, you start adding high humidity, we're going to have heat indexes, once again, up over 100.
Which, you know, having said all of this, next Wednesday, it looks like a huge front is going to push through. And then right thereafter, we're going to be in the low 80s.
And why is that important?
When we talk about getting the lawns prepared to go into September and sow grass seed, we still, at this point in time, we need to come up with a game plan that how are we going to approach getting rid of some of those broadleaf weeds, the grassy weeds that are in our lawn, like you?
Mm-hmm.
So temperature is of the essence. So the next couple of days, although we're going to talk about some of those products later on in the show this morning, refrain from spraying because you're more than likely to injure the turf than you are to get rid of what you're trying to eradicate.
And those products will say it right on the label. It's not going to work above 90 degrees.
Do you read labels?
I absolutely do. And I'm a big believer in if it says 2.5 ounces, I mix 2.5 ounces. I'm not one of those that says, okay, I'm going to mix 5 and I'm going to nail this stuff. If it's 2.5, I'm going to do 2.5.
Good for you. I agree. Think about it. The companies that make these products, if 2.5 ounces to a gallon of water isn't really adequate, surely they would tell us, you need 4, you need 5, or you need 6. Therefore, what are you likely to do? Use up the product quicker,
mm-hmm.
and then you're back in the store buying more. So they really
you might injure your good turf if you mix it a lot heavier than you should.
More than likely you will. There's no doubt about it. I've seen it happen many, many of times. And, you know, don't try and crank it up a notch or two.
But we've been talking about nut sedge for how long? I mean, a month.
Why do you think that it's so prevalent this season versus maybe the last couple of years? Any ideas?
I think temperatures and the way things dried out, so lawns got under stress very quickly because we went from all that moisture mm-hmm. to the extreme heat and like 19. I remember we were talking to Ron Rothaus and it was 19 straight days. And I thought he said we had 1/114th of an inch of rain because, you know, he's monitoring all that stuff. And I think because I didn't water, you did. Your lawn's better.
Yeah, but I think when you get those high temperatures and along with the humidity and the watering element, I think that brings it on even quicker.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because I didn't water, so my lawn got stressed and thinner. And that, obviously, what do we always talk about? A thick lawn prevents more weeds than anything.
So you're saying when you started to water,
I'm saying when all of a sudden, I'm saying when all of a sudden I noticed that my lawn was getting thinner and I was seeing more bare spots, it opens it up for that seed to take a lot easier as opposed to the root grass choking everything out. And all of a sudden, I think it started because mine started with a small patch a month ago. And all of a sudden, it's blossomed because I've been selling all the product. I didn't want to take it from my customers. And finally, I'm like, I have to take a thing of sledgehammer home and I have to spray these things.
You know what I've been doing? When good customers come into the store and I just put my arms out and say, you know, I'm really sorry. I can't get my hands on it. It's in short supply. It really is. What I end up doing is bringing in some of what I have at home that's opened or I've used. And I'm like, here you go. Well, how much do I owe you? You don't. Just bring it back to me.
Yep.
I just want to help you out.
Well, so you tried to order some sledgehammer. And the reason we're bringing this up is because if you have nut sedge, you need to go get the product because it is in incredibly short demand. And you can't use the Bonide if you're going to overseed. Like my lawn got thin, so I have to overseed. So I cannot use the Bonide Sedge Enter because it's got prodiamine in it. And then I won't be able to seed this fall.
Well, you can in your beds, but not in the lawn.
I'm talking about my lawn.
Yeah, right, not in the lawn. You know, you're throwing a little economics on me there. Supply and demand?
Yes.
Ooh.
You would think prices would go up.
Ooh. Hold on to that thought. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Works, and welcome back, Bob Bard. And we have to take a quick break, our first one, and it's about 6:12. We'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. We're right here in the 6 o'clock hour, right about 6:15. And welcome back, if you're just joining us, good morning. And we're ready to talk a lot of gardening this morning. We're going to talk about getting our lawns kind of set up to turn the corner here as we approach September and get things right in play so we can sow grass seed and have a nice lawn established before we go into the fall season. And also want to remind you, you can stay in touch with us via our Facebook page. Go out there and like us. Also check out What Plant Am I? Not many people responded to that one, Bob, for this week. This is an interesting specimen of a plant. It is a tropical plant. It is one that I remembered seeing up at the New York City Botanical Gardens, and I was totally impressed with it. It just love that white with that red bloom in it, in that combination.
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
That
and,
it is.
I think this one finally, I think you finally stumped everybody. I really do. And I know you've been trying, but our listeners are so smart. I think you got them. I haven't seen anybody answer, but you still have about 45 minutes to get to the Facebook page and see if you can figure out what it is.
That's right. And also, you can stay in touch with us via email. Certainly send us an email to inandaroundthehouse@b105.com and give us a day or two to respond to you, and we'll certainly do that. And by the way, we received another email from Connie Compton. We need to get that together for the gardening club. We're going to do that presentation.
Yeah, I called her before I left for vacation.
Do you remember the dates on that, by the way?
She called me sometime in September.
I thought it was like the 18th.
Yeah, something like that, where we're going to go out and do a talk to the Amelia Garden Club.
Okay, so we'll finalize that today in some way, shape, fashion, or form. I think that was on the 18th, if I'm not mistaken. And also, if you want to catch a past show, Alex, are you up to date on the podcast? Good man over there. What would we do without Alex?
I don't know.
You can certainly catch a past show at your convenience at any point in time. You might be out in the yard working in the landscape. Just put the old ear pods in and listen to a past show. Or if you're out running for a morning jog, you can do it that way as well.
You know, you had mentioned just a little bit ago of, you know, we're talking about lawns and, you know, why are we talking so much about lawns right now? What's the dire importance? Why are we making it such an emphasis in our show?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I'm sure there are a lot of people that think, so what? It's a lawn. It's not a big deal. But I think for a lot of other people, it is. It is for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, curb appeal is what it's all about. And if you don't really keep your lawn looking tidy, nice and clean, that's your prerogative, and you can go ahead and do that. I'm not going to call you out, but at least mow it, you know?
Yeah.
At least mow it. And as long as it's green, if it has clover in it or whatever, or crabgrass, as long as it's green, that's what's important. But really, there are a lot of people, especially, you know, in the guy world, I should say, and I know there are a lot of, you know, females that like nice lawns too. I'm not counting you out, but for most of us guys, it's important to have a nice looking lawn. I don't know about you, but that's why.
No, I usually like a good lawn, and it just really got away from me this year, to be honest with you. Just that short amount of time, of lack of rain really caused quite a bit of damage. So, you know, it's not a total loss, but I'm going to have to fix some spots, and I'm going to have to do it in September. And to me, that's why we're making
a big deal of it,
because you have to get rid of the weeds, and most of the products take 2 to 4 weeks before you can grass seed. And then there are some products, like we had mentioned, you can't use at all right now. And you're going to want to start the three-step sometime in September. If it's hot after Labor Day, I'm not going to speak for you, but I'm going to tell people to hold off and just sometime in September, depending on when things cool down. I'm going to do my first step, or my step two of the Fertilome three-step with the lawn food with iron, and it's coming. It's not that far away, and being, you know, today is already the middle of August. If you spray certain products, 4 weeks from now is the middle of September, you know, now you're only about 4 weeks away from where you can't throw grass seed at all again.
What would you tell a homeowner, what approach might they take if they have a great deal of crabgrass? Would you have them go ahead and spray it, or would you just allow it to die out?
I think it's a good time to spray while it's going, getting ready to start getting dormant. So I would still go ahead and try to kill as much as I can. And because we're trying to prevent those seed pods. Like I sent you a picture of that. I think we believe it's quack grass.
Quack.
And
quack you up.
Look at the seeds already on it. So guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Guess how many are going to blow on my lawn next year? I'm going to have a few issues, especially if I don't thicken my lawn back up to where it was in the spring. Because in the spring, I was mowing it every 3 or 4 days. 19 days, it got severely damaged.
My neighbor next door, he had some work done on his foundation, and is really yet to get in there and work on some things, but has a little bit of crabgrass. And usually, you know, what we'll do, we kind of have like this mutual agreement. Sometimes if I'm mowing the grass, I'll get over there on his side. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a small area, or vice versa. But I won't get near his crabgrass.
And why?
Because it is at seed right now, and I don't want that up underneath my mower deck.
Yeah, and then especially if it's a little moist.
Right.
You know, there's a little morning dew, or, you know, your sprinkler got it wet, and then you mow it, you get those seeds and they kind of stick on inside your lawnmower, and then you next week you go mow the rest.
And it could, you know, potentially drop in another area of the lawn. But my front lawn is rather thick, and, you know, using the first step, the all seasons with prodiamine, keeping crabgrass out, you know, out of play, does a phenomenal job for me. But usually, you know, having said that, and I always brag about just using Dimension, which is what I actually do, that works well for me, you know, for the most part, where I'm not fertilizing early in the season. But, you know, that's how that stuff gets transported from place to place to place. A lot of times, think about it. If you have a mower service, somebody mowing your lawn for you weekly, you don't know where they just came from.
Right.
And that's how stuff gets transported from one lawn to another.
If, unfortunately, you're the neighbor who doesn't mow as much as they should. Like, I was gone for 8 days. I was gone by the time I was traveling and everything, about 8 days. I couldn't believe, we must have had a little rain while I was gone. I couldn't believe how fast some of the stuff grew, you know. And unfortunately, some of the seed pods are going to blow. And my neighbors, a few of my neighbors, there's one, and he's nothing but pretty much weeds.
Give me a product you're going to use on crabgrass. Throw a product my way.
The weed out with crabgrass control from Fertilome, I think, is a good one because it has the product quinclorac in it.
Right.
It used to be called weed out with Q. So if you have some on your shelf, it says weed out with Q, you can use that because it's not that old. But it's called weed out with crabgrass. I think it's a pretty good product. Usually takes a couple applications. Why? Because crabgrass is not an easy kill. I actually have some in the truck too. I was going to spray this weekend, even though it's going to be too hot. So I'm going to have to wait till next week, but I'm going to have it at the house. So I'm going to mow sometime probably Monday. And by Wednesday, I can go ahead and start attacking my weeds.
You know, is quack grass labeled on that bottle? Do you know
I don't know, but I'll look.
That's interesting. We'll have to look at that one as well. You know, that would be one of my go-tos. The other one would be, believe it or not, and I'm not, you know, I don't talk a lot about Bayer, but Bayer does a crabgrass product that has phenoxaprop in it.
Yep.
And I have found that to be very, very effective as well, especially on older, more mature, established crabgrass. So really, I think a lot of times, you know, you were talking about quinclorac. you know, depending upon the stage of where the crabgrass is, I think really dictates how effective either one of those products are really going to be for you.
I think that's the most important part of what stage is it, and how is that how is that product going to affect the weed at this particular time?
You know, and before we went into the program this morning, we were talking about how can you distinguish, and this was very interesting. And a lot of times, you know, you have to really research various things. How can you distinguish quack grass from crabgrass? You know, the quack grass has like the little bunny tail, cat tail kind of seed head.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas the crabgrass kind of fans out into, you know, a grouping of seed heads.
Yes, it's very different. And once you figure out which is which,
that's how you'll go about determining what product you'll buy to go
and
after.
And I think crabgrass is probably one of the misidentified weed in the garden. And because Dallas grass can have a similar look when it's mowed,
mm-hmm.
it's low. Quack grass can have a similar look. You know, foxtail grass. There's a few things when mowed can have a similar look.
Right.
And it's very easy, even for professionals, to misidentify some of these weeds.
Well, we're here to help you. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. We have to take another quick break, and we're right there near the bottom of the 6 a.m. hour, and we'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works alongside here with Bob Bard, and while we were in the break, we have a phone call from Bob over in New Richmond. Bob, good to hear from you. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Tony. I'm fine. Is clover considered a weed?
No, not really. It's only... If only a weed is defined like this, in my opinion, it's something that you don't want. That's you know, I know you as a beekeeper, that's an important item to have around.
Yes.
And I say this all the time, people who have clover and it's in a nice mass and it looks good in the lawn and you can just go about your business and mow like normal. There's nothing wrong with that. It always stays green during the summer months. No problems.
But, bees love it when it's flowering.
Yeah, bees love it when it's flowering.
Mm-hmm.
So I know we're walking a fine line when we talk about various things. And like I said, with some people like yourself, Bob, that are bee aficionados, you know, keeping those kind of things around are of the essence, very important for bees.
I agree with you. I think
you know,
some people they're just taking care of their lawn.
Bob, but you have a lot of clover in your lawn, I take it. Is that correct?
I have a fair amount.
Yeah.
And, like I said, it is real important that the bees have something.
Right, right. No, I totally agree. Now, you know, I want to flip this over just for a moment and look at it from another perspective. You know, now there are those people who are very fanatical about their lawns, and I also look at it and evaluate it from this standpoint. When you have a nice thick turf type of a lawn that's healthy, thick, green, guess what? You never have to spray anything. It's unlikely. So you're clean from that standpoint going forward. So it's all relevant. It's all, you know, as a matter of what's aesthetically pleasing to you. But no, Let it be. I you know, when I went over to that bee meeting that you guys had, what was that, a couple years ago?
Yes.
For me, you know, I was an eye opener. I gained a great deal of appreciation for, you know, the approach to not spraying. So I'm all for that as well. It's a matter of preference. You guys really opened up my eyes in regards to a lot of that.
You know, I think that's important. Also, if you only got a small amount, take your little garden weeder out there and just do it by hand.
Right.
Then you don't have to worry about it.
Right.
So,
summer treating you well, Bob?
Yeah, it's doing okay.
Just okay?
How are the bees?
You have to understand, I have a personal issue that happened this year.
Oh.
So, I didn't have a chance to really work with my bees.
Oh, okay. Well, I hope you can turn the corner and start working with the bees again. I did for the first time this year, not honeybees like yourself. I believe that's what you primarily work with or have in the past. But we've had Justina Block in from the Osmia Bee Company.
Mm-hmm.
And I purchased my first bee house and had some of the mason bees and also some of the leafcutter bees. And to my amazement, they were busy. And I really enjoyed it. I loved the activity.
Yes.
So, how are the bees, by the way? How are things doing? Are things getting better? Are they getting worse in general all around? How are things out there?
Well, each colony is different. Mm-hmm. Each hive and all that, it could be different. And that, you know, it's, I'm not one to be able to take and preach on what is and what is not. You know? Mm-hmm. But, you know, the strength of the hives, you know, I have 10 hives, but you can see the amount of activity on each hive different.
Got it.
So to say what's wrong with one versus another, I can't do that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You can't really, I would think that would be a hard determination or, you know, an assessment to come up with and say, this is exactly what's happening.
Right.
Because every hive is different, obviously. But you guys still having your meetings over there? Is it the Brown County Bee Association? Is that what it is?
Yes. Every second Tuesday of the month, all except December and January, at Western Brown High School.
Yeah. I really enjoyed my visit when I came over. I think it was a couple of years ago. And like I said, that was an eye opener for me. I had to come to realization, Bob, that you know, not everybody wants to get rid of clover and other things that are beneficial for the bees, and I understand that, and nothing wrong with it at all. Bob, always a pleasure to hear from you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have one hive that I walk, you know, 2 feet in front of it almost every other day. And they don't, you know, they don't come out after me or anything else. They are real gentle, mm-hmm. you know, as, you know, for a colony.
Right.
As long as you don't stand there and look threatening to them, you ignore them, they ignore you.
Right. No, couldn't agree anymore. Well, Bob, wish you the best and always stay in touch with us. It's a pleasure hearing from you. And, you know, maybe sometime we'll get back over your way.
Okay.
All right. Have a good weekend. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
See you.
Yeah, I had a great time when I was over there. That's one of the perks of like doing this, you know, this type of a show,
right?
And we'll have to take that in sometime.
Well, and I think one thing to remember is, you know, we're talking about there's chemicals, and we need to use things responsibly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of also, you know, and like this whole Roundup thing you hear, if you use it responsibly the way it's supposed
that's key. That's the key. All right, we have to take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about what we need to do to get the lawn together. Maybe you might have the question or the thought of, hey, what's a really good grass seed to use? We'll tell you more about that when we come back, 749-B105. Welcome back to In and Around the House. You're enjoying the morning here at this point in time. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. Welcome. And while we went into the break there, we have another call here on the line, and that is with Mike. Mike, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
We're doing well. What can we help you with?
Well, I have an issue with some grass in my yard or some kind of weed, and I've been trying to deal with it unsuccessfully. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what kind of grass it is, but it has these long runners. You probably are familiar with it. Like if you start to pull it out, you just have feet or yards.
Right.
Yeah, you know, roots.
Is it in spots, or is it like in areas where the lawn has gotten thin over time? Is it thick patches of it?
Oh, there's thick patches of it, yeah.
Okay.
And it probably is thin, but last year I just tried to start over, kill the whole section,
mm-hmm.
reseed, but now it's back.
Oh, so. It sounds like it could be one of two types of warm season grasses, and Bob, you can chime in anytime. You know, it could very well be Bermuda grass. Okay.
Okay.
It will spread by that type of fashion with the stolons. And you can see them as those runners go out. And where there's various leaf nodes, you might see a little bit of rooting underneath that point.
Right.
Where that is on a stolon. Also, you know, when we talk about warm season grasses, we talk about zoysia grass, which is more of a rhizomous type of growth habit, which kind of goes under the ground and kind of comes up, will run the same way, but it's not on the surface for the most part.
Could also be bent grass.
It could be bent grass.
Or Bermuda.
Or Bermuda, yeah.
There's a few. Yeah. It just depends.
I would more than likely say Bermuda at this point in time.
Okay.
And what did you... I'm sorry?
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
What did you use, was it last year when you were trying to eradicate it?
I believe I just used Roundup.
Roundup? Okay.
Yes.
Now, that would have been one of the products I would have encouraged you to use. And I will say this, you know, we're all familiar with the Roundup product. However, not all the Roundup products are created the same, or are they equal? You know, the active ingredient is glyphosate, and that's the one that there's a lot of controversy over. You see a lot of TV ads concerning that.
Correct.
So whenever you use that product, you know, be careful not to get it on your skin and immediately wash it off, any of those products. But the purple cap is the strongest amount of glyphosate that's in that Roundup product. If you're using the red cap, that's the lowest amount. So they have varying degrees of concentrated amounts of glyphosate in their products. If you really want to go and get a good product on the cheaper side, and they don't advertise, it's not a big national kind of name. It is in some areas of the country. But look for High Yields Kills All.
Okay.
Better price, a lot more glyphosate in it than the red cap Roundup. Just be patient. Wait about 5-7 days after you spray an application, you might say, you know, it's not really working. But then all of a sudden you'll start seeing things brown off. But you're at the point of the season here. We're in the middle of August, that if you need to come back and spray again, you're still going to have ample time to do that and then sow grass seed. You may not get all of that in one application. It's pretty tough. And try and, you know, as it dies off, start raking it out. And then as things start to potentially put on new growth again, spray it again. Yes.
Okay.
And I think you should see some really good results, and you should be able to get things under control and hopefully come back and be ready to sow grass seed right there at the beginning of September, or the first mid or second week of September. What do you think, Bob?
I think it's a great tip. That's exactly what I would do. The only thing I would just, you know, let him know is you're not going to get it all. Some's going to come back next year, but if you can get most of it, then you can just treat a little spot or two next year.
Okay.
Yeah. It's much easier that
way. Thank you very much.
Let us know how it goes. And when Bob said you could treat next year, look for Turflon Ester, because that will work against Bermuda grass and also at the same time not affect your turf. It's selective.
What was that called again?
Turflon Ester.
Okay.
ESTR.
Yep.
And that has triclopyr in it. So that's a selective herbicide that will go after the Bermuda grass, but it will also not harm the turf.
And that is a high yield, which is still Fertilome, but that is a high yield product.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's pretty easy to find. Yeah. A lot of people carry it. I know Tony carries it. I carry it. I stock it because it is a very good product, and it does do a nice job with other weeds as well.
That it does. Mike, where are you calling from, by the way?
Cincinnati.
What garden center do you typically frequent?
I guess it's Burger Farm and Garden.
Yeah, go see Bart.
Yeah, check with Bart. I know that they carry it as well. So right there, that would be my source.
Okay, thank you very
much. All right, Mike, have a good weekend. Great question.
You too. Thanks, guys. Bye.
That is a very tough weed, and it is all over. I think
it takes
it's creeping bent grass. What you're thinking? Or Bermuda?
No, I think it's Bermuda.
Yeah.
You know,
either one, though, is tough.
Yeah, they could be tough. It really takes a couple of applications, you know, just because of those stolons, the way they kind of creep out and run out and get established.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's very evident, you know, as you pull those, you can just see how that roots in so quickly. That's why they like that on the golf courses.
Yes, and it's a shallow root. So it's easy to water, you know, there's a lot of it out there just because it does seed fairly quickly. And when it seeds, it can go.
All right, we still have a lot to talk about this morning. What plant am I? Our plant of the week. Also, problems and solutions in the landscape. That's an interesting one as well.
We've been talking about, even though it's not our true topic, but it's weeds are bad.
Weeds are bad. And also, we have a special guest around the 8 o'clock hour from Elegant Homes and Exteriors, and that's Don Riley. Always a wealth of information there. We have to take another quick break. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. 749-B105. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Wirsch with Bob Bard. We're close approaching the 7 o'clock hour, and if you're just joining us, welcome. And we have a lot of stuff to talk about this morning, and one of those, nobody got it, that I
you
can see.
You stumped them. That's the first time I can ever remember you stumping everyone.
Let me chalk that up.
You got one out of 9 years.
Our listening audience is smart.
They really are. Our listening audience is incredible, and I love getting out, and when I talk to them, and you know, and they maybe stop in the store.
What do they
I
say to you, Bob, when you talk to them?
Yeah, you know, they love the show, they're entertained, they're learning stuff, and I think that's the most important thing, is, you know, just getting some different things. Now, there's times where our plant of the week, or what plant am I, it's a little easier, and then there's times where, you know, you maybe manipulate the picture to try to fool people. And
oh, no, I'm not trying to. Yeah, I
you did
do
on
that
the Boxwood earlier in the year. But for the most part, you know, we're not trying to be deceiving, or we're not trying to stump. That's not always.
We just want to show you some interesting things.
Yeah, and the things that are out there. Because, like, you know, a few weeks ago you were out, I think, you know, we had, you know, a lot of tropicals just because people maybe aren't introduced to them. So I thought this one, it's a beautiful plant, the white with the red tip. It is a tropical, so it's something you can plant, but you got to bring in.
This is a plant that you'll typically get, most of us, you know, that are in the garden center world, when we bring up the tropical plants out of the South, out of Florida in particular, you know, that's where this particular plant's going to come from for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
There are some other nurseries. I think Monrovia will grow this particular variety, but it was a few years ago, Bob, that this was on one of my shipments by mistake.
Right.
And it was in bloom, and it was beautiful, and I was like, wow, I got to figure out what this is, because I wasn't familiar with it. And then, you know, it wasn't there shortly, long after that, I was up at the New York City Botanical Gardens and saw it in bloom as well. And I was just taken by it. And the name of it, take a stab at that?
Well, I'm going to take the common name on that one.
Take the common name.
So, and there's a bunch of different things. Glory Bower.
Yes.
Bleeding Heart Vine.
That's how I know it as being.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So there's multiple names for this.
Clerodendron.
Clerodendron. That one's easy.
Thomsonia.
Yeah.
Thomsonia.
I want you to spell that. But anyways.
Thomsoniae.
Oh, there you go. You looked, you cheater.
No, I have it in front of me. Yeah. It's really an interesting plant, to say the least.
Yeah.
It's tropical. It's a zone 10 to 12. Can reach a height of 12 to 15 feet easily.
Yes.
And almost the same spread.
Yes. And especially in the native area, which I believe was West Africa, where Thomas Thompson, who named it, you know, kind of found it, and you know, and it was climbing up to 15 feet there, but it's a permanent plant because of the temperatures.
Exactly.
You know, here it's not going to give you that.
No.
It's a zone 10, which means probably 50 degrees, 40 degrees cool temperature would be max.
You need to start bringing it in like you would your hibiscus, your mandevillas, and so forth. That's how you would treat it.
Yes.
However, this particular plant needs something to grow on, a trellis.
Mm-hmm. Well,
okay?
It's a vine.
Which is fine, but don't be afraid, you know, to try. If you happen to find this particular plant variety in the nurseries next spring, give it a shot. I'm gonna try and order these again. I was just really taken by the bloom, very very stunning. A long bloom period, and also when you bring it in, you know, cut it back a little bit, just, you know, back off your watering during the summer months. It wants to stay kind of evenly moist.
Mm-hmm.
Do not allow it to dry out. In the summer months, just keep it evenly moist. Part sun, part shade, probably morning sun up to the early part of the afternoon would best be suited for this particular plant. I love that contrast.
Now, there's a few things that can affect it. And usually, you know, wintertime, you want to keep it in a cooler room out of direct sunlight. And when you water, at least when it's coming inside,
back off.
You got to back off. You know, you only water
when
the soil is dry.
Step off.
I'm stepping back.
Back off. You have to back off the water. And do not fertilize. You're right.
And the vine will lose some of its leaves. but it's nothing to worry about. Like your hibiscus, a lot of people,
right,
when they take their hibiscus in and then they bring it back out, it looks terrible in the spring, and all of a sudden it's going to leaf back out, and that's going to happen. But, you know, there's a few things. It can get botrytis. You know, that's something, especially if it doesn't have any airflow.
Don't scare people with that kind of terminology.
Wait a minute. This is coming from the guy who says, let's tell people about everything.
Boy, botrytis.
Yes.
Ooh, okay.
So, but it can. It's not a big deal. You know, it's just good air circulation is always good. You know, keep it away from the cool window. You don't want that draft of cool temperatures really, you know, flowing in on it for the winter.
Well, don't complicate it. Don't throw all this information on anybody all at once. Just treat it like you would a mandevilla, and when you take it back out in the spring, prune it back, get it acclimated in some light, fertilize it.
All right,
and
Professor
voila.
Works. Let's talk about it. How are you going to do your mandevilla then? How are you going to treat your mandevilla? Because people are going to be bringing them in soon. I would get as much light as possible. Okay.
Unlike this, this needs to be in a little cooler spot.
Okay.
I'm not.
No. Someone asked. I said, tell me about the mandevilla. How are you bringing it in? Are you going to water it all the time? You're going to let
it
dry out?
I'm going to back off the watering.
Yeah.
Before I bring it in, I'm going to do a couple of things.
Okay.
Which is something, this is what we're going to talk about too as we approach the fall season before we bring plants indoors. I'm going to just touch on this real quick right now. Make sure that you treat it for insect activity before you bring the hitchhikers inside.
What do you mean hitchhikers?
I'm talking about, you know, you might have aphids, you might have you might have mealybug, you might have spider mite, you might have something on your plant before you bring it in. Yeah, you can have any of that stuff. Use like a systemic granular product to put on a soil surface. So as you're watering that plant before it's time to bring it in, it has plenty of time to get down into the root system, get ingested and taken up into the plant via its root structure into the upper part of the plant and protect it against sucking insects. I would also spray it with a product of some sort. So I'd bring it in. I might even prune it back a little bit. We're talking about the mandevilla, and Bob's over here giving me this cheesy look, like, how would you do it?
I'm doing that because you just ripped on me for giving too much information, and here you go, Professor Works.
You're scaring people with that term botrytis.
No, I'm not. People just need to know what to expect. So.
That sounds like some sort of some kind of disease you don't want to pick up.
No, it's just from lack
you get it on the street.
Lack of airflow, and then you get too wet of soil. So not a big deal. So, but hang on to that thought. We're gonna move on this show, Professor Works and I. But we want to remind you to get out. If you can't follow us on the radio in the car or at home, download the B105 app from your app store that you have on your phone or on your computer or wherever. And you can listen to us live no matter where you go. So you can always catch it. You can also listen to the podcast as Alex always gets those up for us. And then also a great reminder, hit us up on Facebook with any questions you might have. We love the phone call, so you can reach us at 749-B105.
Just go to the break. So, we'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works, alongside here with Bob Bard. Boy, the first hour, we're right here at the top of the 7 o'clock hour, has flown by. We still have a lot of stuff to talk about.
It's just because I'm back.
Yeah, it's just because you're back. Hey, you said it was a little veiny.
That's funny.
You're so vain,
man. I wish we had a camera in this studio so people could actually see us. I mean, yeah, we love doing
a good
the show
time,
and we have
yeah,
a good time.
It is a good time. Mm-hmm. It's one of those jobs. The only thing is, I don't like to get up early, but I like being in here.
I don't mind getting up early anymore. I'm used to it by now.
I heard that alarm go off at 3:30. I was like, whoa.
Why aren't you going to the gym with me?
I can't hang with you, dude. I can't beef up like you. I would be afraid that you would ask me to spot you with some big weights on that barbell because I wouldn't be able to get it off your chest.
Oh, yeah, you would.
Little skinny old me. Yeah. I don't think I could help you out there, pal.
Hey, you posted, posted some pictures about some petunias, and there's a lot of people having some issues. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
The tobacco budworm. Who is this guy? What is this guy? What does he really like to get on? And primarily, most people that have been coming into the garden center here in the past couple of weeks, you know, they're bringing in their petunia blooms with all these holes, or, you know, you can see where they're just chewed on a little bit.
Yep.
But that is the tobacco budworm.
Yeah.
So what do you do about it? It's real simple. It's a quick fix.
Yep.
Go to your local garden center, nursery, pick up spinosad or another product called BT.
Yeah. Thank you, Renee, for putting that on the Facebook page that she sprayed it. Blooms are blooming again. Thank you, Renee, for that.
It's that simple. And thanks for the testament right there by Renee. That's real easy. Cut them back a little bit. Spray them. Maybe fertilize them with Jack's Classic, the petunia feed. They love that stuff. It's crazy how much they love Jack's Classic petunia feed.
And if it's really bad, don't be afraid. Like we said a few weeks ago,
go ahead and
give it a haircut. There's still plenty of time to give it a haircut because petunias bloom well into October. Mm-hmm. And if you get them healthy enough and you take care of them, you will have some incredible blooms because they can handle a little cooler temperatures. We even grow them in the garden center in cooler temperatures in a whole separate hut from all the other stuff because they like it better to be a little cooler.
They do. They behave totally different. Mm-hmm. They will even grow and look a little different versus, you know, something that's in a colder environment when it comes to the petunias. And there's some other plants, too, even the calibrachoas, the million bells, versus something that's grown inside, outside, temperature-wise. They'll look totally different. They really will. It's amazing when you just change that environment just enough, you can tweak how it looks.
And these guys are out there, and they're not very big, but they're easy to spot once you see them. They don't hide really well unless they're on that green stem and you don't look close. You know, sometimes they can blend with the stem of the petunia a little bit, but if you look close, you'll see them.
And a lot of times, too, you'll see little black droppings maybe inside the petunia bloom itself. And, you know, that's an indicator as well that you've had some tobacco budworm activity. Just spray it with BT, spinosad. You know, there you have it. Our landscape problems and solutions. That's been a problem, I think, for some people the past couple of weeks. But it's an easy, easy fix.
It is. You know, and problems and solutions. We were talking a few weeks ago about the fall webworm. And still seeing a little bit more activity.
All right. Wise guy. Let me ask you. Because someone had asked me this the other day. They sent me a text. Do I need to worry about the fall webworm? I'm going to ask you that. But what do you do when you're a homeowner and it's like 25, 30 feet up?
Well, the great news is you really don't have to worry about it. They're not going to kill your tree.
Right.
They're going to make it look really bad. But they're not going to kill
the tree. It just looks like you don't take care of your stuff. No, I'm just kidding.
No, it happens.
Yeah, you're right. So, it's just let nature take her.
If you can reach it fairly easily, maybe a small step ladder or something without, you know, getting into trouble, go ahead. You can cut it out and remove it if it bothers you and just get rid of it. Throw it in the burn pile, you know, wrap it in some plastic, throw it in the garbage can. Just get rid of it. You can spray. If you're having people over and you need your house to look great because you got family coming in, they've never seen the place and, man, I just want to make everything look nice. Even sometimes good pressure right out of your hose, knock it off. You know, sometimes, especially that works great for the eastern tent caterpillar, which is spring, but it looks a lot like this. But, you know, any mild insecticide will do it. But is there any reason to spray it?
Well, you need to be able to reach it, maybe puncture it with something, a stick, or, you know, maybe a high-pressured hose, get through that webbing, then spray it, and you'll be more effective. And again, BT will work on that, spinosad, anything for the caterpillar.
Yeah.
So that's easy, too. But when it's way up there, don't even worry about it. Let Mother Nature take her course.
Yeah, I haven't seen enough damage on everything to really say, hey, get out there and spray it. You know, I personally haven't seen it. Maybe somebody has. They're eating leaves. Well, guess what's going to happen in about 4 to 6 weeks? Leaves are going to start falling anyways. We're not that far from fall. So at this point, I think that's why our problems and solutions over the last 4 weeks have been so geared towards lawns, because that's really the most important thing.
Weeds have been crazy this year. Yeah, you're right. You know, the lawns, I've seen a lot of stuff in lawns this year. I've even talked to some of the guys that have lawn care companies, and they'll echo the same thing. They've not seen as much weed activity this year like they, you know, in past years like they have this year.
Why do you think that is?
You know, I think a lot of that, it really had to do with the early spring rains, you know, just kind of set the stage there. And actually, you know, coupled with maybe what happened last fall, you know, with some of the winter annual weeds, you know, germinating, getting a foothold, And with ample water in a spring, stuff just took off.
I think that's a really good point you just brought up, because there's a lot of people who have weeds that may have said, I put down my pre-emergent, or I put down step one and it didn't work. Well, remember, all the rain we had, everything got used up. And I know on this show, you and I talked about, you may need a second application of either the dimensions or of another first step, you know, to try to prevent the summer weeds. You did it, right? You put something down in May, right?
I've already put it down twice.
But you put one down in May.
I did mine in the beginning of April.
Beginning of April, and then another one when?
In June.
June. And how bad are your weeds?
In the front, I don't have any.
There you go.
The back, I still got to work on it, because I had some trees taken out, so a lot of it's still in progress.
I put just step one down in March, and guess what? I didn't do anything else.
You got quacked up because you had quack grass.
I got quack grass. I got nut sedge. I got a little bit of smooth crab grass.
Don't you listen to those guys on the radio?
You know, the one guy, the professor.
I have tenure. You're right.
The professor works. I think his name's Anthony. Anthony works. You know, I listen to him, but, you know.
In the grocery store.
Sometimes, you know, he's all weirded out. He got that long hair extensions from a few weeks ago. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with him.
I have them rolled up.
Do you?
They're rolled up.
But anyways, we're talking lawns because it's so important. You're probably getting tired of, like, why do they keep bringing it up? Why do they keep bringing it up? You know, you need to hear it, because now's the time. It's not going to be this week. The heat came again. You had a few weeks ago. It cooled down enough to take care of things. If you didn't do it, now you're into next week. And if you keep being like me instead of Professor Works, you procrastinate on killing these weeds, you're going to get late in the season, and you're not going to get your seed in.
It's Dr. Works.
Nah, you ain't there yet.
Tell him I have my PhD. Alex, help me out.
Your PhD in something, but I can't say that on the air, because the FCC would definitely not be happy with us. Neither would our boss, Grover.
All right. Let's talk about something when we come out of the break that's in bloom right now, rocking and rolling.
She's a beaut.
She's a beauty, and we'll tell you more about her when we come back. 749-B105, if you want to chime in, feel free to do so. It's about 708, 709, and we'll be back in a moment. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. A little bit after 7 a.m., the sun's starting to come up. It's going to be a beautiful day, and it's going to be a hot day, so make sure that you drink plenty of liquids, the good liquids, to keep you hydrated, especially if you're going to be working out in the garden or in the landscape. And if you don't have any of those chores that you have to do, hey, you might check out the Reds today. They play this afternoon, or is it tonight? Do you know?
I'm not sure.
Is it tonight?
I think
well,
it is tonight.
Then forget that idea.
They struggled They struggled a little bit last
That's
night.
That's all right. It's still
Cardinals.
Fun. It's still fun to go down and take in a ball game.
You know
I
what?
Don't care what you
I
say.
I love the Reds.
Win or
I don't
lose.
Care what's going on.
No. Win or lose, it's always a fun time to take in a ball game. That's for sure. When you're at the ballpark, it's a good feeling.
You know, and I
Reminds
just love,
me of as a kid.
I love looking at the turf and seeing how they take care and manage
that. Wishing
that
your lawn looked like that.
I would love for my lawn to look like that. And, you know.
Got it.
It's just so beautiful to see
lawn,
it gives
how
you, they take care of it.
It gives you lawn envy, doesn't it?
Sure it does.
Especially when you have quack grass.
Easy for
quack,
you to say.
Quack me up. But anyway, a great way to stay in touch with us is send us an email to inandaroundthehouse@p105.com. Check out a past show on the podcast. Alex keeping that up to date, doing a great job. And also, of course, our Facebook page. It's a great way to stay in touch with us. And give us a little bit of time, and we will eventually get back with you. And don't forget, 8 o'clock hour, our good friend Don Riley from Elegant Home Exteriors will be joining us. And we're going to see if he can get a hold of his good buddy, the Turtle Man.
Yeah, they are good friends. You know, he's been busy. I you know, him and I are friends on Facebook, and obviously from the show we're friends, you know, and we kind of know each other. He has been. Busy.
That's what I understand. He's busier than a cat covering up its stuff in a litter box.
He's busier than you,
That's
the
busy.
Mole man at your house.
That's busy.
Take
did you
care
see
of those
moles?
Moles?
Did you see those moles?
I did. You caught a couple more.
Yeah. I set two traps near the same run.
And which traps are these?
They're the Caesar traps.
The Caesar traps.
The mole eliminator.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They work awesome. They're just on their game. Set those two traps the other morning. One went off. And when I was out there kind of looking at it, thinking, I'm going to dig you up, the other one went off.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's when you caught them both, huh?
Caught them both. Caught them both.
There you
like an hour and 15 minutes. I was chuckling, giggling.
So that's three that you've caught in the last like 2 weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And are you seeing any more activity now?
No. But actually, I was really surprised to get two near the same run.
I caught some when I was on vacation. Well, I didn't. My pool did. So, you know, he just ran in the pool, I guess.
There's a lot of casualties in that pool.
So.
Was he in the skimmer area?
He was in the skimmer when I found him. So, you know, I mean, moles are bad. They're everywhere. And, you know, setting those traps, you got to find the run. And how you do that is you step on all the runs, go back out within about 12 to 24 hours and see which run is poked back up.
And that's I-75.
And that's where they're at. Because sometimes they'll use one run one time. And then there's times where they're in the same run over and over and over, moving around.
If you can catch
that one, that's how you caught yours in an hour and 15 minutes. You found both of them because you found the runs that they were being used.
I know what I'm doing.
Well.
Yeah. You know what? And here's the other thing. If you do not catch anything in a 24 to 48 hour period, after 48 hours,
move it.
Move the traps. Yes, there isn't any activity there. So move the trap. You know, I had to go to Congress and declare war against these guys. I really did. I got approval, and you see it. Well, you know, that spurred a lot of activity on Facebook.
It did. Well, that's because everybody's having some issues. I mean, I was out in Bethel, and a lady, she said, we've lived here 20 years, 20 plus years, never had an issue. I've been in my house 19. This is the first year I've ever had a mole issue. Ever.
The last 2 years are the first. It's the first for me. You know, here's something else. Somebody had to make a wisecrack comment. Don't waste your money on the mole eliminator trap. Just spend a buck and buy some bubble gum. Are you serious?
There are people out there who have said juicy fruit will kill them.
Look at his face.
I've never seen it. I've tried it. It didn't work.
What about bazooka? You know, here's the deal. You know, moles are insectivores.
Yeah.
Okay? And when you put the poison peanuts down in the hole, you know, leave the peanuts for the ball game. You know, not the poison ones, the good ones, the salted ones. But here's my point. If someone can show me a mole that has bubble gum in his mouth, I'm all in. I will believe that approach. I'm all in. But here's the deal. You may not see any more activity, but that doesn't mean he ate the bubble gum or the juicy fruit.
Right.
Really?
Come on. And speaking of those moles and peanuts, I've had a lot of people use them and just laugh and say, why'd I waste my money? I have had people swear that those are the best stuff going. And I don't get it because they shouldn't be eating it.
Hmm.
You know, but still, the trap, I've had so many people buy the trap. And when they set it the way it's supposed to, they're coming back and saying it was effective.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, the beauty of that particular trap is made right here locally in Sunman, Indiana.
Yes, I did.
Made in the USA, right here locally. So look for these traps at your local garden centers and nurseries. And I know we talk about moles a lot, but boy, who doesn't get aggravated when you pull in and you see this little trail? It looks like you're pulling out the map, finding your way in an area you don't know where you're trailing about. I mean, these guys, they don't even use GPS. They just go about their way.
Yeah, they're there. And did Liz Jacobs somewhere on that Facebook page answer or chime in with something?
She was wondering if it could be this particular trap could be effective for voles.
Yeah.
I can't answer that. I don't think so because really it takes a little bit of effort and moving that soil upward to trigger it. And I don't think voles have that type of it.
They're a lot smaller.
Yeah, they're a lot smaller. So usually, you know, I use mouse traps.
For that.
For voles, yeah. So, you know, you never know, but I just don't think they're big enough to really trigger the mole eliminator trap.
And you're going to spend a little more money on the mole eliminator. You just are. But like I said, I haven't had anybody bring it back and say it doesn't work ever. So that's a good sign.
And, you know, here's something else I want to tell you. When you buy this particular trap, buy it. Just buy it. Don't hem-haw around about it. If you have mole issues, go for it. Keep the box. Tape a little notepad, like a sheet, right next onto the box, because you'll end up loaning it to somebody. I can promise you that will more than likely happen. write their name down and the date they have it so you remember where it is. I've lost a couple traps like that.
Where you've loaned them out?
When I've loaned them out and someone's like, oh, yeah, I gave you those back. I gave you those back.
Yeah. So, but, you know, moles are out there, another problem, and you just got to get after them and stay after them. I mean, attack them. You can't just say, well, they'll go away. And they might, but probably not. And by the time they do go away, guess what? There's going to be a lot of damage. It won't take long.
Okay. Real quick question related to the mole and the damage that they do. Really, they're kind of aerating your lawn.
In a bad way.
And we'll leave it as that. You have any remedies for repairing a lawn that has maybe a small amount of mold damage or a significant amount of mold damage?
Well, if we can get some good rains and you eliminate it, sometimes you'll just get natural settling in there.
Exactly.
And so you don't have to do too much. If your mower's a little bit bigger, you have a rider mower, you know, yeah, you can, as you're riding and you're mowing, you're going to kind of smash some of that in. The big molehills, sometimes you just got to...
That takes a little work.
That takes a little, sometimes you got to dig it up. You got to move things around. You know, you're not going to usually tamp that soil right back in. It just doesn't work that way. No. So you're going to have to do a little bit of removal. Or if you're my neighbors, you just take the mower and run right over them.
A little
cloud dust. Starts firing all over.
Yeah, that's the answer right there.
Yeah. So, and then sometimes just a good old fashioned hand rake it all around, smooth it out. Well, it's loose. So throw your grass seed down here in September. And
what I usually do, my lawn's relatively thick. It's healthy. I just gently press down on it. You know, I'll water it and just let it go, and it heals itself. You can't tell where the activity was.
Yeah.
But that's really how I would go about, you know, repairing some of those areas.
Yeah, a lot of my mole areas where he's been kind of already with a couple rains have already kind of settled back down in pretty good. Some of the really main tunnels I have to do a little work on, but you know, they can get in your beds, they can be anywhere, you know, and they can make a mess.
Oh, I wouldn't want one in my bed. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. No, you wouldn't want it in your
bed. A good old back scratcher there. It's amazing how big those paws are.
There you go.
It's incredible how much earth those guys can move. All right. We'll get back to She's a Beauty when we come out of this break. 7:22. This morning's flying by. If you have anything you want to talk about that's going on in your landscape, or maybe something you want to do, a project this upcoming fall, we might even touch as well on, you know, get with your local landscapers, you know, the guys that do all the installations if you're not a do-it-yourselfer kind of person, because now's the time to start mapping that out. And I know that you guys are pretty busy a good way out from where we are at this point in time. So keep that in mind, and we'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard, and just shortly, our good friend Don Riley from Elegant Home Exteriors will be joining us. We're going to talk about everything from windows to gutters to decking, the patios, you name it. If you have any questions that you might want to pose or ask Don, hang out with us in the 8 o'clock hour. And before we went into the break, Bob and I wanted to kind of talk about, when we mentioned She's a Beauty, she is a beauty, and she's blooming big time right now, and that is our plant of the week. Tell us what it is. Give us a drum roll over there, will you, sport?
It took a while for her to come on, though. Let's kind of, before we give it away, it took a little while for her to come on.
One more time. Another drum roll. Any cymbals in there? A little louder.
Crepe myrtles.
Yes. Oh, gosh, I was down in Covington the other day.
Yep.
Right there off of Russell Street. And you can see it on the Facebook page. That's what a crepe myrtle looks like this time of year. All those panicles, the blooms are incredible. The length of those panicle blooms can be anywhere from 6 to 12 inches, or give or take.
Honestly, that's
showy.
I mean, they have been beat up the last few years. They've been beat up, but
let's talk about the positives.
They're coming. I know, here you go. You're always getting on me, but I'm just always trying to get the
Debbie
facts.
Downer over here. The glass is half empty.
I love this plant. And your pictures are gorgeous. And I was driving around places, and you just see these things, and they're in full bloom. And what they needed was all the heat that we had. And when the heat came, what came? They did. The crepe myrtle started really coming on. And if we'll get 90 which we're going to for the next 5 days, these particular plants with the humidity and the 90 degrees, and if we get a timely rain here and there, are just going to be spectacular all the way into fall.
It doesn't faze them.
Nope.
No. A standout. You know, also, did you know it's AKA the crepe myrtle is called the lilac of the South?
I actually did know that. Yeah. Yes, I did know that. And what I love about it, and they are, let's be honest, they're zone 6.
Mm-hmm.
So they will grow here. You could have some issues. They're kind of like, to be honest with you, kind of like butterfly bush. They'll live, but there are going to be times where you lose them. But putting them in the right spot is key. And you and I always talk about every plant, every tree, proper spacing in the right location is vital. And when it comes to crepe myrtles, I believe if you can get them in the right spot, you will have success.
Yeah, a protected area up close to the house, if at all possible. Now, you know, it's really interesting. You might see crepe myrtles throughout. I've seen a few over there in the Latonia area, somebody's house I was at maybe a month or two ago. I was surprised. They were every bit of 15 feet in height, tree form.
Yep.
And I was taken by it because I know that we've gone through some really cold winters, and a lot of times it may not be uncommon. If we get down below zero around that 5-degree mark, sometimes that's when the crepe myrtle would behave like an herbaceous perennial. When I say that, everything up top from a branching standpoint can easily die back to the ground. But the root system is a little tougher. You know, maybe I would say a zone 5, if it's rooted in and developed enough, that it will flush back out with new growth more than likely the following season, if in fact the winter's that severe.
And I have seen, even though we say put these in the right spot, I've seen people not put them in the right spot and they still live. I've seen people put them in the wrong spot and they die immediately. But there's a lot of dead in them from what you just said, because we had a harsh winter and everything died to the ground and they're coming back from the base.
Mm-hmm.
But those stems are still, I see a lot of people leaving those dead stems up in there. And I would like to, I would encourage, and I'm not, I'll get your take on it. I'd like to see people trim the dead out.
Oh, absolutely. From an aesthetic standpoint, that's important.
Yeah, I think that's key. The other thing that I find very interesting with crepe myrtles is we don't see the giant tree forms here because I don't think they'll live in our climate. You're not going to see the ones you see down south that might be 25 feet tall, 30 feet tall.
You're absolutely right. More than likely, like if you're south of here, down in the Georgia area, you will see them around 20 feet.
Yep.
Maybe a little taller.
Yep.
Up here, maybe 12 to 15,
because
the growing season's totally different.
Right. And on, when it comes to crepe myrtles, there's dwarf, semi-dwarf, small tree, medium tree, and large tree. There's your classifications. Large is going to be 30 foot. Medium is going to be 15 to 20. Then we get into the small crepe myrtles where we're talking about 10 to 15. And I think that area on down to some of the smaller sizes, I think, is when we're having what you see most of around here. And Proven Winners got an Infinity series that not tried personally, but I would love to hear if anybody has and what kind of success. Because you're talking 36 to 60 inches tall, also 36 to 60 inches wide. But I like the size, zone 6, but that smaller size and resistant to deer and the miniature, you know, you can get that in the garden and it won't take over.
You know, if you're going to plant a crepe myrtle, I want to say this and put some emphasis on this. Plant it in a protected area. And, you know, I would also give them a little bit of added benefit with an additional winter mulch. In addition to what you typically do when you mulch, mm-hmm. you know, 2 to 3 inches, I would thicken that layer that a little bit more. But remember to remove what you added come springtime.
When would you put that on? I mean, you're talking about once it kind of gets dormant, correct?
Right, absolutely.
Don't do it now.
No, after it drops its foliage, things are done. You know, I would give it that little added value of protection. Mm-hmm. That's so, so important. But, you know, you just touched on the dwarf varieties, the Proven Winner series, the Infinity series.
Mm-hmm.
There looks like there's a handful of those, anywhere from 2 to 4 feet in size.
Yep.
And, you know, these were kind of developed more for container gardening as well, but we're going to touch base on it. In addition to those smaller space constraint areas in the landscape. That's where they have a great deal of value. So you don't want to put something against 12 feet in a small area. So now we have these varieties that are smaller in stature, its growth habit, that allows us to have a crepe myrtle that will grow in that smaller space constraint area.
Yeah, and
that's a benefit.
I think that's massive key, because a lot of times people want to put these up by the house for the reason of protection. You know, if you can get it away from the winter winds and you can get some of the heat from the foundation, you know, it'll just naturally be out in the wintertime because you've got that warmth inside the house. Mm-hmm. Keep the ground directly around the house a little bit warmer than it would be if it was out in the middle of the yard, you know, exposed to the elements.
Right.
So I think the smaller series, if people were going to try, would be something to consider. And you still just...
What about in a pot? How would you treat it during the winter months?
In the pot, it's either got to get in the ground, plant it in the pot in the ground, you know, to protect it, or you're bringing it in.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're bringing it in. But it can handle cooler temperatures. It's not like our What Plant Am I, the bleeding heart vine, which you can't leave out. You know, or you can't put in the garage. It's going to be too cold. You know, some of these crepe myrtles, they can handle, you know, zone 6. So that's a pretty cold temperature.
Right. But above ground, left out, not a good scenario to be placed in.
Do you think the barn or garage would be enough, or do you think?
I do.
I think so, too.
Yeah. And then sometimes, you know, you might wrap some insulation around it or just protect it a little bit. Back off your watering. Another approach. Don't fertilize. Wait it out. But great for containers. And here's something else I want to put some emphasis on. When you're looking for a crepe myrtle and you go to a reputable garden center and nursery, we are going to handle those and only those that are as resilient as possible and as far north as we can bring them to you, to where you have a great deal of success with them. You need to plant them early in the season, okay? You plant them in the fall, you risk the chance of those not rooting in well enough to make the winter. So keep that in mind. That's so, so important. So the garden centers and nurseries are going to bring you the varieties that are better suited for our area. Now, if you're at a big box store or wherever, it could be a garden center, pay attention, look at the tags. That's so, so important. I'm going to say this because first editions from Bailey's Nurseries, Bailey's is a very reputable nursery. They've put out the Magic Series, various heights, mm-hmm. but they all are Zone 7.
Which means what?
South of us.
Yes.
Well south of us. So the winter will be harsher on those that are labeled as a Zone 7 versus those that are labeled Zone 6.
Yeah, and that's it makes important. A big difference. You know, going back to your container and... You know, I've got a question, but we're going to take a quick break. And when we come out of the break, I've got a question for you going to containers and maybe those who don't have a garage or an area to store it. Maybe there's a solution I want to run by and see your take on it. But if you got something you want to add or a question for us, just give us a call at 749-B105. You're listening to In and Around the House with Professor Tony Works and Bob Bard. We'll be right back.
Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works alongside here with Bob Bard. It's a beautiful morning. The sun's just poking its head up there. It's supposed to be partly cloudy today, partly sunny. It is going to warm up, and it's going to really warm up the next couple of days. So make sure that... you drink plenty of liquid, stay hydrated, especially if you're working outside. That's so, so important. And also, don't forget, you know, next week we're going to have that cool down. So towards the tail end of the week, it looks like some promising temperatures. That's going to be a perfect time for you to get out and do some things in the lawn and get rid of some of those pesky broadleaf weeds. And, you know, just think positive as we get closer to fall. And a lot of people, a lot of my friends, Bob, they love the heat of summer, which I'm okay with, but I like it when it starts to turn a little cooler.
That I know just, you do. See, I'm not ready. I'm not ready
suits
for that
my
yet.
Fancy.
I love the summer. I mean, hanging out in the pool, you and I've played a couple rounds of golf. We need to do some more. You know, I don't like Florida was great. I don't mind the heat. I know a lot of people don't, but to me, I can cool down. A lot of people say, "No, I can't. I'd rather just be cold and warm, keep myself warmer."
Well, you know, maybe I should retract that and say it's more about the humidity levels.
Yeah.
You know, the heat's okay, but when it's really humid, it's like, it's just, everything's, you just feel sticky.
Yeah, because I was down in Florida last week, and it was 90 degrees, but with the wind off off the Gulf, it was comfortable.
That makes it comfortable.
It was comfortable. So I know it's going to be humid, but going into the break, though, we got to go back to the crate.
Yeah, what do you want to ask me?
So let's say a homeowner doesn't have a garage or doesn't have a barn, but they want to protect their crepe myrtle that's in a container.
Do they don't have a shed either?
They don't have a shed, okay. No barn.
I want to make sure that
nothing.
Barn. I see a lot of barns in the urban area.
So, same thing. But right. Is there anything you would recommend to them if they don't want to bring it in the house? That, you know, is there anything they can do outside?
Couple of things. You can try and bring it up close to the house,
mm-hmm.
Into an area that's out of the wind. You might build a little setup around it, a frame around it, and maybe pack it with straw or loose leaves,
okay,
things like that, just to kind of protect that root system and keep the wind off of it. And pretty much that's it. But you have to really be careful. If you're using straw and leaves and you're up close to the house, that might be an invitation for mice.
Yeah.
So don't put yourself in that situation. You know, I kind of liked what you said a moment ago. You know, bury the pot, maybe a little extra layer of mulch, and do that after it has dropped its foliage. That's the best time to do that.
And that's what I would say. Hey, dig a hole, put the pot partway in the ground if it's too big, and take some straw or leaves, maybe even take some burlap first and wrap it in burlap and then straw it.
Could do that. Know?
But I don't like straw up against the house. If you have no choice, maybe take burlap and a couple wood like tomato stakes,
mm-hmm.
You know, and keep almost like a wind protector, because a lot of times it's the wind that really gets those things.
And that's what you're going to do with your endless summer hydrangea.
Well,
right?
You said I am, so I guess you're going to, because I don't do everything the way I'm supposed to. You're going to have to come to my house.
He doesn't listen to those guys on the radio.
I'm going to get Tony Works to come over and help me.
Well, I'll help you do that. That's perfectly fine.
And we'll document it. And we'll put a little video on it. We'll see how it does next
year. You
know,
you just led me to think about something else. And I love this kind of look, this kind of approach. Take a Japanese maple. I know people that do this. And if you can put it in a large container, large enough to protect that root system with a fair amount of soil around it when you first plant it, I think you can be relatively, I know you can, successful with wintering those over. Like in a protected area, because there's nothing more beautiful than a Japanese maple in a large container, like on a patio deck area.
If you've got space, it's great. You know, and there's a lot of plants, the tropical hibiscus, there's a lot of things, and we're going to be talking about it. We're just kind of introducing it to you now because we aren't that far from unfortunately, because the year's flying by. But, you know, there are things that you're going to need to start taking steps to get rid of some of the bugs that are still hanging around and some of those things. So when you bring these containers inside or you're moving them to the right spot, you're not going to have any issues. And we're going to keep week after week kind of
reminding
back into
you,
it.
Yep. Reminding you. You know, when it comes to containers, you know, a lot of times you can bring in, for example, we were talking about the Japanese maple just a second ago from the West Coast, from some of the West Coast nurseries.
Mm-hmm.
They have some of those and big boxes.
They're patio pots.
They're patio pots. They're very attractive. You know, the problem is, how do we winter those over? What do we do with those? That's where the real problem comes into play. Not everybody has that ability to do it. And even with some of the containerized things, I'm trying to get you to envision, not you, Bob, just in people in general, to envision, we always talk about annual planter combinations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, You don't have to just do it with annuals and maybe perhaps perennials, but take it to a whole different level, you know, bigger, better items, you know, just to give you that kind of a look. But you also risk, how are you going to protect it? And that's when people have the issues of, if it's too heavy, they don't have the means to move it. Do you store plants for people?
Very few anymore, because we don't do the home and garden show. So I don't heat my greenhouse.
Got it.
All winter long. And my particular palm trees can handle very cold temperatures that I have. The Phoenix palm, it can handle a lot of cool temperatures. So I don't heat it up.
I think that would be a great service to offer some people that want to take those kind of approaches. But you can't guarantee that it will make the winter. That would be a very difficult task.
There's one big problem.
Insects.
It's insects.
I got it.
You know, I've got a few people that I've store friends that I store a few things for. And honestly, every year I have to monitor. And by about February, here comes some aphids. Here comes some thrips. Here come, and we grow our annuals in those spots. So I've got to really stay on top of it. And it's the same thing for other homeowners. And if you don't do it, then you can have some issues. You got to really stay in tune to what you have in the house or in your storage area to make sure that you're not. The bugs will find their way. It's amazing. They'll find their way.
Once you compromise your greenhouse with insects, it could be tough to get rid of them. And then that poses a whole nother issue and a problem come springtime when you're growing annuals and other things. That's why those of us who have greenhouses, when someone calls in and says, hey, can you store this for me? Mm-hmm. That's where we're coming from. But that would be a great service if you could provide it. It's just, where does it go from there?
Yeah.
749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. We'll continue our discussion about gardening and maybe talk about some things that have done really well this year, maybe some things that haven't. And also, don't forget our special guest, Don Riley, will be joining us at the 8 o'clock hour. And he is from Elegant Home Exteriors. Go out to their website, check out some of their jobs, some of the work that they've done. You might even have an idea of adding on a room addition or a deck or a patio. This is the guy you want to talk to. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works alongside here with Bob Bard, and we're going to continue our discussion on gardening. And something I want to turn our attention to, Bob, was a great way to stay in touch with us is via Facebook. And just yesterday morning, Kristen Daly sent us a photograph of a shrub that's right there on the corner of her house. I just moved in and this is planted in my front landscape. I'm not sure what it is or how to properly take care of it. Can you help identify it? And this is why, pictures are 1,000 words when you do this kind of thing, because when we look at it, you know, we can really hone in on it. And to look at this one, this kind of caught me a little bit off guard because it's very dense. And that was the magnolia. And you can see it has some sporadic blooms on it.
Right now.
Yes. Uncharacteristic of that particular plant, because you typically see those blooms early in the spring, right there before they start to really, you know, put on a lot of foliage growth. But that is one of the thickest, densest, most dense magnolia I've seen. And it's either a Jane or an Anne, as we were discussing.
That's what I think.
And Jane's notorious for doing this. So that's what it looks to be. Sometimes it's really hard to tell the actual cultivar. But again, I just want to emphasize, this is a great way to stay in touch with us. And just doing that of the sort, you know, helps us help you identify what that is.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's so thick because it's been trimmed, probably with shears. That's how it's got so many of those little branches and it's mm-hmm. so full and so thick. But it does have the pink bloom. And I've seen that little lady series of the magnolias, the Janes, the Bettys, the Anns.
The sisters.
The little sisters.
The sisters.
There's like 7 of them, right?
I believe there are.
I think
yes.
It's 7. Seen them, really bloom randomly throughout the summer, which is always interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen this several times where, I'll go up to a house, there's a pink magnolia in full bloom. And it's generally, I don't see it on Royal Star magnolias. I don't see it on Doc Merrills. I don't see it on Leonard Messels. I don't see it on the Southern magnolias.
Right.
But on this particular ones, these kind of specifically 3 pink ladies, they do bloom several times a year occasionally.
A little more sporadic.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I just wanted to point that out. That's a great way to stay in touch with us. So what's been going on at the Garden Center? What are you guys into? How far out are you with some of your landscape projects? What are you ramping up for?
Well, I'm glad you said that, because if you are looking, and I'm not just talking about Bard Nurseries, if you're looking for a landscape project to get done, you better call. I'm 4 to 6 weeks out meeting people just to get the estimates done, which means probably you may not get it until spring now. But we're booking into October already, mid-October.
Mm-hmm.
We're still working 6 days a week. You know, The rains are going to come, so that's going to make it even harder on the schedule. We're on schedule right now. I know Scott Maddox was in when you were out. He's saying the same thing from Maddox Garden Center in Florence. Their crews are busy. They're already getting booked up. If you've already, if you're going to wait till September, October to call somebody, plan on it being next spring.
Get on top of it. That's why we're talking about it now. Yeah. And, you know, the fall is the best time to do all that stuff, too.
Yeah. We're excited about things coming up in the Garden Center. You're asking what's going on. Guess what's coming? Mum's the word.
They're going to be a little behind. Let's touch base on that for a moment when we come back out of the break. 749-B105 in and around the house. I'm Tony Works alongside here with Bob Bard. We'll be right back. And momentarily, our good friend Don Riley will be joining us, too. So hang out with us. We'll be back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. If you're just joining us, we're at the top of the 8 o'clock hour, and we're going to touch base on something real quick, and that's going to be mums and where they are at this point in the game because we've had a lot of warm temperatures. And what does that do? We're going to tell you in just a second as we get our guest, Don Riley from Elegant Home Exteriors, nestled in here. And Bob, do you grow mums at the Garden Center, or do you primarily bring those in?
We just bring those in.
Yeah.
I don't want to fool with them.
They're going to be a little behind because of the heat. So that kind of, you know, the heat kind of has a negative effect on the bud development. And sometimes when you see mums available early, way before the fall season, they were somewhat forced. They're grown in shady conditions where the temperatures are a little cooler, the buds develop and come on a little sooner, and as a result, we get color earlier and quicker. But if you're looking for that longevity element from that mum that you purchased that's in bloom, you're more than likely not going to get it. So you need to determine what the purpose is when you purchase those mums and they're in bloom. If you have a party going on or you need some instant color, that's one thing. Or if you want to take something to a friend that's not been feeling well or thank somebody for looking over and watering your plants while you're on vacation, something with color, that's perfect. But think about longevity term. When it comes to longevity, you want to get them as they naturally come on. The cooler temperatures help with the preservation of those blooms hanging on and lasting a lot longer.
Yeah, it's that's a good point. I don't like to buy mums this time of year that already have blooms on them. I just don't. They're not going to last very long. Just not going to happen.
And you sound like my friend Ron Robin. You know, we were talking about
Ron is a smart man.
Well, no, don't go that far. Wait a minute. He's a good guy. You know, I gotta question his intelligence.
Uh-oh.
No, I'm just kidding.
You're hard on everybody.
Ron's
today.
A great guy.
Don, you better watch out. Tony is on fire. He's getting on everybody today.
No, I'm not.
Jeez.
But he said the same thing the other day. But you might have a different application for what it is that you're purchasing the mum for.
I don't disagree with what you just said as far as, you know, if you're having a party and you want to bring something, you bring something with color, you're not going to bring a mum that just is full of buds. Probably.
You could if they're cracked in color.
Yeah, but I particularly, like, even at the Garden Center, you know, mums will be early bloomers, very early bloomers, mid bloomers, very late bloomers. I mean, there's so many classifications of when things bloom. We typically are ordering ones that bloom a little bit later because why do most people buy mums for fall color?
Absolutely. The Belgian series in particular. Now, I have a question for you. Do you label them as being hardy mums or garden mums?
We only bring in what is classified as a hardy mum.
See, I'm a little on the edge about it because I don't think mums, I have to say this, I don't believe that they're as hardy as they used to be because I think we've developed so many different types of cultivars and varieties and colors and sizes and all that good stuff. I think we've kind of given way to hardiness by doing that. So it depends on, they're shallow rooted. Getting them in the ground early is of the essence so they can root out. And then, you know, they're more than likely able to take that winter. And more than likely they will, but I don't think they're as hardy as they used to be.
But if you buy a garden mum, what are you going to get? Just a garden, true garden mum. An annual mum, you're getting one season.
Well, there are some that are just they're annual mums.
Right.
There are those that are a little bit more resilient,
right,
from a hardiness standpoint, and that's why I like that Belgian series. It's a great series of a mum.
I do too. And you got to remember, when you're buying something of size and it's $10, There's a reason that something, a Big Mum, might only be $10. Because it's probably not going to live forever. It may not even give you another year. It's $10. You buy a $30 plant, you expect that to live year after year after year. So remember, it's kind of, you know.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. Because we have, we put a one-year warranty on our perennials. Mm-hmm. Some of our court perennials, we might retail for $4.99 to $6.99.
Right.
Heaven forbid if one of those don't make it next year, because somebody will really gnaw on me. I lost it. You know, I want my money back. For $4.99, they're really upset at me.
You'll give them another one.
I'll give you another one. You know, yeah. We'll give you a credit. We're okay. Settle down. It was just... It was the price of a McDonald's sandwich, for crying out loud. You know,
they are the best they're supposedly the best hamburgers in the world.
Mm.
They're the number one selling. So does that make them the best?
I argue that.
I know. I would. No, but I get your point.
We're facetiously joking around here,
we are,
too.
But your point is, you buy a $5 plant. But when you buy a perennial, the expectation is it's going to live next year. Odds are. I mean, you have
that
expectation.
Right.
When you buy a shrub or a hydrangea, the expectation is it's going to be there next year. When you buy a mum, you kind of have an expectation that it could live or it may not. It's just different.
Right.
But and that's okay. You just got to know what you're getting. But everything we sell is meant to be more of a hearty mum, because I want to try to give everybody the highest quality that I can give them to have the best success.
Absolutely.
But when it comes to mums, there's no guarantee that they're going to make it, because they just are too shallow rooted. And if we have a winter like we've had the last two, a lot of them are lost.
If they don't get rooted in, they can easily heave up out of the ground. That's when the crown will freeze out.
And we'll talk a lot about how to take care of those when that time comes. We don't need to get into it now, but there are things that
I
think you can do.
No, I don't want to get into it now.
Yes, you do. And it's, you know, as far as, you know, how to take care of them in the winter.
You got it.
You know what? Get off your soapbox. See, this was all you.
No.
This wasn't me. This was you.
All right. We're going to take another quick break, real quick, and when we come out of the break, we're going to talk with Don Riley from Elegant Home Exteriors, and just kind of get an idea of what's going on in his world and what his company can do for you if you have any remodeling projects coming up or room additions that you might want to think about doing. This is the guy you want to talk to. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works alongside here with Bob Bard and our good friend Don Riley from Elegant Home Exteriors is in the studio with us. You guys have been busy because I see all the stuff that you've been doing here on Facebook and all that good stuff. Tell us a little bit about it. What have you been digging into, literally?
Well, I was telling you guys early on the break, we just finished a nice deck project over in Hyde Park. We had a home that was probably built in the 1800s, and a gentleman from Cincy Rents called me and said, "Hey, we got to get this deck off here." He said it's the homeowner almost fell through it. So we pretty much went over, and the deck actually was crumbling in our hands. It was that bad. And I was just showing Bob some of the photos, and we'll be putting them on our Facebook page. But it's amazing how long somebody will let a project go until they actually say, "We got to replace this," you know. So, but we got it built, and they're super, super happy with it.
Awesome. Yep. Awesome.
Yep.
So what else have you guys been busy with? So you're doing the deck projects. Yep. Are you still doing, you know, any type of room additions or anything coming up from that standpoint? Porches, windows?
Busy with the decks. We're doing a ton of siding and windows.
Mm-hmm.
Been really busy with the siding and windows. And we're getting ready to go into that season, too, where people start thinking about their windows a lot more, because I've been getting a lot of window estimates lately because winter's coming.
Right.
You know, so, but, yeah, decks have been, and we'd actually been pouring a lot of concrete lately. Concrete's been a big, people have been replacing pads in the back and doing patios and stamp concrete, so we've been busy with that. So.
Speaking of, do you, when you're doing like a patio or maybe a meandering sidewalk of some sort or driveway, you name it. Do you find, because I know that there's various color tinting things that you can do with concrete.
Yes.
Do people lean in that direction or they just do plain concrete?
It depends on the customer, but I found that a lot of people like to add a little color to it. So if you're doing like you guys doing landscaping, and mm-hmm. they're making the backyard really elegant or beautiful, they like color to it because, you know, it ties in with their landscaping. So, as you guys know, you guys do some wonderful landscaping projects. So There's nothing better than a good looking patio with some beautiful flowers around it, you know?
So, right. Yeah, right. So. And a lot of people, that's their backyard haven. They entertain, they spend some time there. They unwind there when you get home from work, you know, 8-10 hours at work. We spend a lot of time at work. You just want to relax. Yeah. And, what a great way to do it.
I think a key with any concrete product, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but the key is to make sure you're getting the size that you want.
Yes.
There's a lot of people that I've worked with over the past that'll do a patio and stamp it, and they just make it too small. If you have to, spend more money on that at first. Push the landscaping, which here I'm the guy selling it, but push that back 6 months if you have to just for your budget. Don't get that wrong. The patio and the size and the shape is the most important thing because it's going to be there hopefully forever. You know, so I think it's key whenever you're doing a patio. I'm sure you tell your customers, you know, how many people are you entertaining for? You know, are you going to have big parties? Are you going to have small parties? You know, what are you using it for? Know the size. It's very important.
I hear that a lot. People always say, I wish I built a larger deck, or I wish I would have built a larger patio, and it's or a wider driveway.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into that project, that's the time to do it. Just make it happen.
Yeah, we always, when we're building a deck, we always try to mention putting a patio on it if it's grass.
Yeah.
Because it's just going to be so much nicer with that patio on it. Or you can enjoy the... And we're also building a lot of these gutter systems for underneath the deck. It's becoming a big thing. I get a lot of requests. So we'll actually frame out underneath the deck, and we'll run metal skirting underneath there. Mm-hmm. And then we'll put a 5 or 6 inch gutter so you can actually sit underneath the deck and you don't get wet.
Right.
It's a really nice system. And it's kind of pricey, but a lot of people are requesting that because they want to sit underneath their deck and enjoy the deck.
How do you keep rodents out like squirrels or raccoons from making, you know, way up there? And when you cover that with those systems, is there a way to do that?
Yeah, we actually skirt the side so you, okay, so nothing can get in, and then we can actually seal everything up. We'll use like a 50 year silicone caulk or something. We seal all the cracks up really nice, and mm-hmm, nothing can get inside, mm-hmm, there. So,
you know, it's very interesting you say that, because a lot of times underneath the decks and so forth, you see where rain just makes its way in between the decking boards, and you got that little, those little channels underneath, and you have a little bit of erosion. I got a little bit of that myself right now. You know, that might be a good idea, something I might want to consider. But first things first, I need you to look at my post.
Yes.
And then I want to get that upper decking taken care of.
Well, and the thing is, too, is if you put that system under there, if you do have a nice patio, like you said, it's going to keep that water from...
Right.
Putting pits in your concrete, because what happens over time is water actually pits that concrete from dripping over the
years.
So
it'll groove it.
Yeah, and you'll notice you'll get a little rust spot or something, maybe from a screw on the deck or a nail on the deck, and that rust will actually hit your concrete patio and eventually cause a rust spot there. So, yeah, so it's a good thing to keep an eye on that, and we're more than happy to come out and give you a free estimate on that system that goes underneath your deck and make it look elegant.
Can people put that system in already an existing deck fairly easily, or do you got to tear it off, or how's that work?
The system actually installs right underneath the deck.
Okay.
So we actually, what we do is we use furring strips, mm-hmm, and we fur out the underneath part of the deck and we slope it.
Oh, okay.
So it's almost like we're building another frame system underneath the deck.
Gotcha.
And then we put a metal skirting system underneath that.
Gotcha.
So when that water comes in between your deck boards, that quarter inch it's in between, you know, or inch,
yeah,
it goes right on that system, goes right to the gutters.
So, oh, gotcha.
Getting right down your downspouts and out into the yard.
So it isn't easy for somebody who's already got an existing deck. It's fairly, it's not necessarily cheap, but it's easy to add.
Yes, yeah.
Man, what an outdoor living space when you automatically got a cover, shade, you can sit out there in the rain,
yes,
you know,
yep.
I mean.
And we can cover that system up with a final soffit, too. If you don't like that metal look underneath there,
mm-hmm,
I can actually frame it and put furring strips underneath that system and put a soffit, a beadboard soffit under there, and give you a flat surface look to make it more elegant from the bottom. So it's a really nice system.
It
really
becomes an outdoor living space.
You have to get up early to pull one on Don, don't you? He's got a solution for all that stuff.
Hey, you can throw a TV in there, a refrigerator, a grill. You know, I drop down screens.
Well, that's what I like. I like to grill out during the winter months. So being able to do that, you know, out of the elements, that's not a bad idea or a bad gig.
Thanks for rubbing that in again. Every time you say I grill out all winter, how many times? I keep telling you to invite me over. You never do. to grill out.
All right, we'll invite you over.
Yeah, I've heard that for five years.
Tina and I will grill out, and we'll order out for you and Elizabeth. How's that?
Yeah, I figured.
Because she's picky about what she eats.
So
I will tell you guys this story. I have a carpenter that works for me. He's been my dearest friend since high school. His name's Damien, and probably one of my best friends ever. And every time we do a project, he tries to sell the customer a flat screen, put a flat screen TV on the wall if we're building an addition or something. And it's funny. They'll say, your carpenter came up to me and said, we got to put a flat screen right here. He said he'd run the wire for me. Every time we sell an outdoor living, so he tries to put a big screen outside because people, they love sitting outside watching TV.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
I was going to say, that's almost a must anymore. If you're going to put a cover on it, you might as well put a TV in there too.
I will tell you this, that would not fly at my house because right now, I mean, Tina, still to this day, we've had our big screen TV in our like great room. It's too big, Tony. It needs to come down. And in our season room, no TV.
Wow.
So that would be nixed at my house right now. Tina would put the kibosh on it. 749-B105 in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard, our good friend Don Riley from Elegant Home Exteriors is in the studio with us. And if you have any questions about, you know, any projects you want to do and take on with your home, Don and his team, his staff do wonderful work, a great reputation, and give us a shout. 749-B105. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. It's 8:24 a.m. and the morning is flying by, and we have our good friend with us, Don Riley from Elegant Home Exteriors. Go out and check out their website and also their Facebook page. A lot of really cool stuff on there. A lot of the projects that they've done in the past will definitely entice you to want to do something with your home. And before we go any further, Don, give us your contact information and then tell us a little bit about the event that you have taking place August 21st.
Yeah, sure. You can go to eleganthomeexterior.com. That's our website, eleganthomeexterior.com. And then you can reach us at our Cincinnati office at 513-618-6404. Or you can reach us on the Kentucky side of the river, 859-992-7363. And on August 21st, we're having our Back Home Patriots event at the Florence Freedom. If anyone out there wants to come, gates open at 5:30. I got 8-time world cornhole champion Matt Guy coming to the event. Matt is a good friend of mine, and he's won the world cornhole championships 8 times. And last time,
well,
was
he's not played Bob or myself, obviously.
That's right.
So Matt would be more than happy to come up here in the studio and play you guys anytime.
Bring it on. All right.
we'll take him down. Not really.
But we're going to have a great event. It's all to support the veterans. I've been supporting veterans for a long time, me and my team of carpenters and builders. I've got a lot of friends in the business too, and we're always supporting veterans. And, we all, you know, if a veteran calls us and says, hey, we need a ramp built, or I will buy the material and we'll go do the project. And we'll help these guys because guess what? Their sacrifice means everything to us.
Right.
And we'll step up to the plate every time. So that's what Back Home Patriots is all about. I appreciate it. Let me share
kudos,
that with everybody.
Kudos to you guys.
Yeah.
And also, if you can't make it and you still want to donate, isn't there a place that they could go to do that?
Yes, you can go to our Back Home Patriots website, and you can go to backhomeent.com if you want to donate. Backhomeent, that stands for entertainment.com. And right there, they'll click on the donation link. It takes you right to our page, and you can donate. We'd really appreciate that.
Yeah, and let's face it. I mean, we got to thank all our veterans, all our active duty, EMT, fire, police. I mean, they don't get enough credit for putting their lives on the line every single day, and so many of us, and I do sometimes too, take it for granted, and we shouldn't.
Well said. Yeah. No, that's great that you guys do that. You know, I want to ask you something else because I know that you're a Pella window certified installer, and I think some other window companies.
Yes.
Are there any incentives or any rebates that you know of before the end of the year that can go to homeowners who do, in fact, take on a project with new window installations?
There's not a lot of rebates right now. They ended that last year, but there are some benefits to putting in windows in your home. You can write some of that off on your taxes for the energy efficient side of it, and it's going to add value to the home. So depending on, I'm not an accountant by any means, but if you talk to your accountant, I'm sure they can, if you do put new windows in your home, you can get some kind of benefit on the tax end of it for just, you know, for the benefit of making your home more energy efficient. So,
and speaking of windows, what varieties or what types of windows do we have to choose from today? You know, tell us a little bit about those the different styles. And I guess really, maybe their energy efficiencies or I guess there's lower end windows, higher end windows. What are the differences?
Well, one of the things I tell people all the time is you can buy windows like you do storm doors. You can buy a $100 storm door. You can buy a $200 storm door. You can get the best Larson storm door out there for what, $500, $400 to $500. So windows are the same way. It's all you can. I can set three windows up here in the studio, and they'll all look the same. But I can, if I break the window down to a science and tell you what's in the window with low E and argon and the frames and welded sashes, and it takes it to a whole nother element. So they all look the same, but it's how they're built. And a lot of windows are built with different low E's and solar band 60s. And so there's a lot of different manufacturers that put a lot of what I call goodies in the window. And I really talk a lot about Pella because Pella steps the game up, and that's why they're the best in the business. They use this high solar band 60 film that goes on the glass. They use the best argon gas in the business. They have two different lines, vinyl lines, and they have a wood series. Mm-hmm. So they have a clad on the outside, wood on the inside. A lot of different species of wood. So there's a lot of different styles and flavors, as if you want to call it, out there. So they have a lot of selections for homeowners, which makes it easy for a guy like me because I can go in and lay their brochure down and say, do you want wood or do you want vinyl? If they say I want wood, then I can walk them through the process of what the wood window is going to do for them.
Right.
And you know, if somebody says, well, I don't want to spend the money on wood, but I like a nice vinyl window, I can take them through that process too.
You know, Margie at Bushman Supply, they sell a lot of the Raynor garage doors, and we've done this before, but you can get that color to the color of your trim. Are those kind of options available with Pella?
Yes, and you can actually now you can paint the outside to match whatever color you want to the exterior of your home, which is really nice. So it's a little bit more expensive, mm-hmm. but they can custom paint them in the factory. You know, so if you got a brown exterior and you want your window to be beige, we can paint it beige. You know, so it's a really nice process.
So you're talking about the stuff that goes into the window. What is that? I mean, because a lot of people don't know, what is that film and that gas? What does that do? And my second part of that question. Is a better window really, are you going to notice that much more efficiency in the winter and in the summer months?
Yeah, so let's talk about argon gas. Argon is a heavier molecule. It breaks hot from cold. So basically, when the dominant force on the outside right now, it's hot outside, it's trying to find every crack, crevice, and hole in your window or your wall, and we all have them. Mm-hmm. If your house is more than 15, 18 years old, I guarantee you have 1-inch crack, crevice, or hole in your window or door somewhere in your house. I know I do because my windows are actually, I haven't replaced my windows. They're older. So, and I'm usually the last guy to replace my stuff. So.
It's like Tony making fun of my weeds in my yard.
But because we're so busy working on everybody else's uh-huh. house. So, but the thing is, if you take 1-inch crack, crevice, or hole in your house and you basically have all these windows or doors, that's like taking a brick out of your wall.
Really?
So you're cooling basically your house or heating your house with one brick gone. So if you just have 1-inch crack, crevice, or hole in one window or door. So argon is actually a heavier molecule. It's going to separate that hot from cold. So that 1-inch break between that glass, 1-inch right. in between the glass, when that dominant force is working its way in, it's going to stop it. So it's not going to be able to penetrate through that crack, crevice, or hole and come in. And if you got more than 12 windows doing that, I mean, you're letting a lot of air going out the door.
Especially come wintertime when it's really cold and you're trying to heat, or this time of year when the AC's running nonstop.
Yep.
You know, just why don't you just open your window and run the AC? That's basically what you're saying.
Absolutely. And then solar band 60 is what everybody's using in the industry now. Solar band 60 is a film that they float and laminate between the glass. And that's going to block out 85 to 90% of the UV rays that come in and fade your drapes, your carpets, your furniture. Wow. So you guys, I don't know, my first car was a 92 Ford Taurus when I right out of high school. And I remember the seats were faded because the sun would come in and bleach the seats out. Well, that's what happens in your windows. If you'll notice your floor, your carpets get a little faded. Mm-hmm. Well, that sun comes in, those UV rays tear everything up. So this solar band 60 not only helps keep the energy level of the house good, but it also keeps all that fading from happening inside the house. So,
okay.
Great information. Yeah. We have to take another quick break. Our good friend Don Riley from Elegant Home Exteriors is in with us in the studio this morning. And if you have anything you want to ask Don, 749-B105 is the number to call. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works alongside here with Bob Bard and our good friend Don Riley from Elegant Home Exteriors. And real quick, while we're in the break, we have Mindy on the line. And I think Mindy, Bob, has had some issues growing grass or getting it established. Good morning, Mindy. How are you?
I'm great. How are you all?
We're doing well. Tell us a little bit about the scenario that you're in. What's been plaguing you?
So I have some shaded area of grass that's off both sides of my patio. I just cannot get grass to take and grow there. I've brought in topsoil and tried it. I have put in your garden tops or garden potting soil kind of stuff and put it in there. I have a dog, so I even fenced that part off to keep him out of it while I, seeded it, strawed, everything. And I, for years, I just have not been able to get grass to grow in those areas.
How large are the trees? You said it's a shaded area, so that really comes into play. Very large?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are they close by? Are they off?
Proximity-wise,
I mean, this patio area where...
Yeah, so you have the patio, you have the grassy area, and then the tree.
Mm-hmm.
So they're at the end of that.
Yeah.
They shade it.
Well, this is not what you want to hear, but really, it's tough to get turf to grow in that kind of a situation, especially if they're large trees and you get very little sunlight in there.
Right.
And a lot of times, when you're using various types of turf seed and all that good stuff, there truly is not a grass seed that loves deep shade. A lot of times it will remain thin, kind of anemic. Other weeds kind of make their way into the soil area around the turf that's there.
Mm-hmm.
It's really,
I can even take weeds.
Yeah, it's really difficult. But what I want to suggest to you is if you can send us a couple of photographs.
Oh, okay.
And maybe what we'll do, a lot of times when you can't beat them, we need to join them. And Bob, chime in anytime. What we might want to do is plant some perennials that love deep shade.
Mm-hmm.
We might be able to.
Well, my only problem with that is that my dog, that's an area where he loves to run. And I swore I was not going to go through this again this year because last winter, the mud that came into my house was ridiculous. And I'm ready to put like AstroTurf or carpet or something out there.
I know people have done that.
Is there any sunlight hitting this area at all?
On the one side, a little bit. On the other side, not really.
Okay.
However, this my neighbor's supposedly taking down this tree.
Ooh, so that's a plus.
That would help.
If all of a sudden you open up, and I was going to say, can you limb the tree up to get more sunlight underneath? If the tree comes out, you should get more sunlight. And as soon as that happens, rough the ground up. And as long as you've got probably 30-40% amount of sunlight peeking in there, we can get grass to grow, I think, in that amount. So, because the turf fescues will grow in 70% shade. So that's quite a bit of shade. But, sounds like yours is more than that now. But if you can get some sunlight in there, you can get some grass to grow.
Okay. I'll get on the guy to get his tree.
That's right. Tell him to get it out of there.
Get it out of there. But, at the same time, if you'll send us a couple of photographs, I have your contact information, and we'll help you pull this together.
Yeah.
Thank you, because it has been a thorn in my side for years. I just don't want the mud back in my house this
year. Understandable.
If you have to, you can always put down like a nugget mulch or something lightweight that's easy to rake up later on next spring.
I never thought about that.
Just for the winter, just to keep the dog a little bit cleaner. Get some of that cheaper, pine bark mulch, the smaller stuff that will pick off of them real easy. At least for the winter, if he doesn't get the tree down this year, and that would help you.
I went and put those straw blankets down.
Mm-hmm.
I spent the day putting those down, and within an hour, she had them pulled up and shredded. And
what kind of dog do you have?
He's a mutt. He's a shepherd, chow, malamute, great Pyrenees mix.
As what my dad would call that breed, they call them Sooners.
57? Oh, what?
The sooner they come, the sooner they want to stay.
Somebody else called him a Sooner dog, and I didn't know what that was.
That's what it is. All right.
He's a great dog, though.
That's awesome. All right, Mindy, we'll do our best. We'll be in touch.
All right, thank you.
Have a good weekend. Bye.
You too. Bye.
That's tough. Shade is tough. Last time I had somebody put that big mulch circles around each one of those maples because they couldn't get sun.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what we did. It turned out looking great.
There you go. Have you ever helped a homeowner, Dom, with anything of the sort? Maybe putting a little small deck there off the patio, turning it into like a little living space. Sometimes that might be something of the sort that could be done.
Yeah, I had a lady in Mason who loved sitting on her front porch, but she hated getting wet. So we just added a little overhang porch on the front, and I bet you I've done three other projects for her just because we put that little porch on there.
That's so interesting. Yeah. You know, there for a period of time, and you can kind of help me with this.
Mm-hmm.
They were building a lot of homes, maybe, you know, in the 90s, without porches, coverings. You know, you just had the stoop, you know, the sidewalk up to the stoop. Has that approach changed a little bit with some of the newer home construction? Are they adding porches to homes? Are you doing a lot of porches to that style, those homes that were built during that period?
Yeah, we're doing a lot, but you know, the weird thing is you get in these older subdivisions like in Mason and Tri-County and those areas, you run into a lot of easement problems with these building these porches because the offset of the street is so far, so you can only build in certain scenarios. So it's like a lot of these folks, they want to put one there, but the city won't allow them.
Right, you have to be so far off the street.
Yes.
Yep.
So they won't allow them to put one there. So they're kind of, you know, I hate to say, but you either put it on the back or you don't get one.
So you can't even get a variance on something of the sort. They're sticklers for it.
Yeah, it's real bad in Westchester because the roads, the street, you know, short, the yards are short,
mm-hmm.
and they're right next to the street, so they won't let them build. It's kind of amazing.
You know, it's funny. You just reminded me of something that you really put a lot of emphasis on the last time you were in the studio with us, and that was pulling and getting the right permits.
Yes.
Because you do that. You don't go around that whole element.
I pull everything.
No surprises.
Yeah. I tell people I spend 90% of my day in a courthouse, and they say, oh, are you in trouble? And I say, no, I'm pulling permits. So. Yeah, it's I pull a lot of permits. Newport is a stickler. Newport, Bellevue, Dayton, mm-hmm. Kentucky. I just pulled one for a doctor over in he's taking an old building over in in Dayton, Kentucky, and he's going to make an ice cream shop. And we're putting some designs together for him now. And the permitting process is everything to these guys. And I met three inspectors there before we even pulled a nail. They want to see the walls. They want to see the structure. Three guys came through and met with me three different times before we could even demo anything. So it's these older historical, they're getting real sticklers on making sure that, you know, guys like me are pulling permits and doing things the right way, because it's nothing for a building to collapse if you don't do it the right way.
What are the repercussions of if you don't get the right credentials or permits? Can the city like take action in any way, shape or form on somebody trying to cut corners? Or
they can fine you. Mm-hmm. That's about, I think, as far as they can go with it. And then the homeowner would have to, the homeowner could sue you, of course, you know, or whoever you're doing the project for. But I tell people, don't make that mistake, especially in our industry, because your name will be mud after that, because word travels fast in this town.
Right.
So make sure that you always pull a permit, because like I told you last time, you're doing the right thing for the homeowner, because if they go to sell that property down the road and an inspector comes
in,
the first thing, that's going to be a red flag. He's going, where'd your permit for this basement or this room addition or this add-on? I don't have one. Well, guess what? Now they're going to go back and they're going to fine you. They're going to fine that contract. It's just an ugly mess, and you won't be able to sell your house.
And it's a safety thing, too. When you're running wiring, plumbing, and all that other good stuff, that really comes into play, too, with inspections.
Yeah, a lot of guys try to cut corners, and it all it does is hurt the homeowner.
Got it. 749-B105, in and around the house. We're with Don Riley from Elegant Home Exteriors. Always interesting, you know, just to hear what you have to say and your spin on various things. And I'm really anxious and kind of wanting really you to take a look at my deck. I need to get something done before we go into the winter. And we'll talk more about that at some other time. We have to take another quick break. We're right here about 15 minutes away from the top of the 9 o'clock hour. The morning has flown by. If you want to sneak in a real quick question for Don, or something you may want Don to look at and his team, 749-B105 is the number to call. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works, alongside here with Bob Bard and our good friend Don Riley from Elegant Home Exteriors. And I don't know where this morning has gone, but we still have another good solid 10 minutes to talk about a major problem with some homeowners, and I know this was a thorn in my dad's side, box gutters. Who can work on a box gutter? That's the big question.
Yeah, I tell you, we run into a lot of situations with box gutters, and my guys hate box gutters because the main thing we try to tell people is if you don't want to spend a lot of money repairing these things, let's cut them off. Let's, you know, trim out that box gutter with a 2x6, 2x8. We'll wrap that in aluminum metal, and then we'll put you a nice 5 or 6 inch gutter. And guess what? Poof, life magic. You don't have any more leaks. You don't have any more problems. You don't have to look up at that box gutter leaking down on you all the time. And it just solves all those problems. And, you know, people don't want to spend the, people don't realize it's $75 to $100 a lineal foot to fix box gutters. That's
wow.
If you have 200,
wow.
Lineal, do the math. If you have 200 lineal feet on your house, that's a lot of money.
A lot of money.
Yeah. So for about half of that, you can tear those off, board it out with a 2x6 or 2x8, wrap it in a metal coil stock. I got some of the best tenors in the business. We can make that metal look like it grew there. And then put you a nice 5 or 6 inch gutter on there and be done with it. So
that would be your suggestion. Let's just take this off.
Yes, absolutely. We suggest that all the time because people don't want to spend the money to repair them and realign them with rubber and go through all that.
Inevitably, you're back to where you were 3 or 4 or 5 years ago.
Yes.
And, you know, you were talking about how much a linear foot to work on a box gutter.
Yes, yes.
You need to take that and also take into consideration that person that's working on it.
Oh yeah.
How good are they? Yes. How good of a craftsman, you know, are they? How good is their work?
Yep.
And will they be around in 4 years or 5 years?
Yeah. And all those guys that are really good in building box gutters out, a lot of them aren't around anymore. They're either out of the business or retired. I got a few left, but it's really hard to find guys that work on gutters because it's there's not a lot of houses with box gutters anymore. But the ones that are, we always recommend pretty much boarding those out. Coil stock and put you nice 5 or 6 inches.
You know, that's almost like the homes that have the tile roofs.
Yes.
You can't, is it very difficult to find that person that can work on a tile roof?
Very difficult. We just did one in Hamilton. This is a very unique situation. Used to, you could pull those tiles off and like Meese Tile or one of these guys in the local here, they would buy that from you. They would pay you money to try to be careful with that tile and give it because they could reuse it for different older applications. Today they won't do that. It's pretty much, you know, we just tear it off and throw it in the dumpster. I mean, you hate to say that, but I mean and then we put an asphalt shingle or a metal roof on, you know, whatever the application is. But yeah, it's, you know, those tile roofs they're terrible. They're hard to work with too because they're slick. You know, it takes a very special person to be able to walk it up and down the tile roof, you know.
You know, I've heard of people bringing up folks from Florida.
Yes.
You know, to work on those. It's really difficult to find somebody that's skilled enough to repair one, replace one, or do whatever it is you have to do.
Yeah, I have a crew that I use for them, but there's very few crews in this area that can do them. So.
Interesting.
And we don't run into them a lot, but when we do, we can handle that situation.
Are people using copper for gutters and roofs and all that anymore? Much?
You know, we used about 3 years ago, it was really big and it's kind of phased out again, I think because the copper prices have gone through the roof.
Right.
So,
well, yeah.
So all the building materials have gone up, you know, we're in one of the best economies ever. So all the pricings have gone up. So I don't think people.
Supply and demand.
Yes, absolutely.
Bob in economics over there.
Hey, that's twice in one show.
I tell you what, man.
Twice in one show.
You are on your
game. Can you
game.
Tell I'm relaxed from my vacation?
I remember economics in college. It had the curve, you know, when the supply went up, demand went down.
That's right.
Or demand goes up, supply goes down.
I was
going
to say, aren't you going to get right? You said reversed. You went to college for that.
Yeah. Thank you. A little reverse there. I got to get up awfully early. I don't think I got up early enough to pull it on you today, so... What else is big time with what you guys are doing at the moment? You know, we were talking about decks. We talked a little bit about, you know, the patios. You've been doing some of those kind of things.
Yeah. You know, this time of year, I tell people the weather's still nice. Do a walk around your house. I do that at my house all the time. I was cutting the grass yesterday, and I walked around, and I just noticed one of my dryer vents has just kind of came loose, one of the screws is. So just little things like that. Walk around. Look at your mortar joints on your brick. I mean, people don't realize you get a piece of mortar that comes out of your brick, that can cause a leak inside your house. You don't even, it could be leaking for years. You wouldn't know it. So just walk around, you know, take it, be observant to your home. You know, it's your largest investment. And I tell people, when I got into this business, that was my whole goal, is make your house elegant. But also, you know, I want you to be able to enjoy your home. That's what it's for. So if we can come in and make it nicer, but be observant, walk around the house, just look at your gutters, look at your brick, look at your deck, and point, you know, you might find some things there that are, mm-hmm. are missing or gone. You know, we have a lot of storms around here in the tri-state. So sometimes, you know, gutter might come loose from a spike or a farrow. You know, of course, today we use hidden hangers. So on a lot of the newer gutters, but the older gutters, you know, they got the spikes and farrows. So
right.
one of your gutters might have pulled out, water might be going behind the gutter. You know, just be very observant to your home. So,
you know, what about gutter guards? Do you guys do any of those types of installations? And I've seen where people have used those, like the foam inserts.
Yes.
Do you
yes.
really want to use a foam insert in that gutter?
No, we use a lot of leaf relief. Yeah. That's my sure
leaf relief.
Leaf relief and SureFlow is another a couple products that we use. And leaf relief is actually a perforated system that goes on top of the gutter and actually screws down to your 5 or 6 inch gutter. Mm-hmm. And it allows the water to go in, but doesn't allow the debris to go in. I don't use those foam applications because eventually they mold and they get
deteriorate. Kind
of,
right?
Yeah, they deteriorate, yeah. And it's a mess to clean that out. I've cleaned a bunch of them out, and I tell people to kind of stay away from those because it starts blocking the gutter too. It starts clogging up your downspout and can cause you some major problems. So yeah, so I would recommend SureFlow, Leaf Relief, some of those systems, gutter helmets, those type of things. I like them. I don't actually install them because those are systems that certain companies, you know, install, but and they're kind of pricey. I think SureFlow and Leaf Relief can do some of the same things for you, and you don't spend the money that you would spend with some of these big gutter. You know, some of these big gutter systems can cost you $4,000 or $5,000, and I don't know if they mm-hmm. do as good a job, you know. But a lot of people spend the money and get them, so right. Apparently they're pretty good. So,
do you find that, you know, I want to say, I think the gutters on my house, are they 4 inch, 4 and a half?
Most gutters, they used to be old gutters. Some of them can be 4 inch, but a lot of the new technology is 5 and 6 today.
5 and 6. Because I don't think the gutters on my home are really adequate, especially when you get those torrential downpours.
Yep.
I mean, it's hard for that water to come off the roof and really flow quickly enough or enough gutter there to hold it and then get it out and away from the house. So I know that at some point in time, I'd like to do that as well. You said you guys install gutters.
Yes.
And you had that system. You can just do one long run without piecing it.
Yeah, continuous gutters. Yeah, we can run about 100 foot to 120 foot right off on one run. Takes about 5 guys to do that. But, yeah, we can put you a continuous system on the front of your house. So you'll never have to worry about those joints opening up and water, mm-hmm. you know, right. and it leaking. So.
Right.
Yeah, and with gutters, you'd gone back just a second ago. You said walk around your house.
Yes.
You know, we encourage that too, especially if on a rainy day. Walk out. See if the gutters are working. See if the downspouts are working. If it hasn't rained in a while, still walk around. I was at a lady's house yesterday where all the mulch in the edge right around where the gutter drops right down downspout right into the pipe, and it was obviously clogged because everything was black backflowing, and you could see the mulch has moved, so you knew something was wrong. Right. And that's just a visual look around. You know, get somebody out there, fix that, and then that way you don't have any problems when the fall heavy rains come. We're going to get them. Yep. It's going to happen like spring, probably.
Good idea. Don, always a pleasure. Will you give us your contact information before we conclude this morning's show, and so our listeners can get in touch with you and your staff?
Yeah, you can call Elegant Home Exterior, 859-992-7363 in Kentucky, or you can call Ohio, 513-618-6404. In the Blue Ash area, and you can go to our website, eleganthomeexterior.com. We welcome all free estimates.
All right, everyone have a great weekend, and Bob and I will see you next Saturday.
At Rural First, we're the leader in rural construction loans because we don't work here. We work out here. We live rural, which means we know just what you need to build rural. Our dedicated team of loan specialists works with you throughout the construction process. And with our digital tool, you can manage your project all in one place. That's how Rural First gets you closer to what matters. Rural First is a registered trademark of Farm Credit Mid-America, NMLS 407249, Equal Housing Lender. Loan subject to approval and eligibility. Other terms and conditions may apply. Visit ruralfirst.com for more details.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.